Tonight's discussion of the 36th best season of all time of Survivor, The Edge of Extinction, is sponsored by our friends over at BetterHelp Online Counseling. If you're having trouble meeting your goals or difficulty with relationships or trouble sleeping, or you're feeling stressed or depressed, BetterHelp is available. BetterHelp offers online professional counselors who can listen and help. It's so important right now, especially during stressful times like these, to have somebody to talk to. Simply fill out a questionnaire to help assess your needs, and BetterHelp will match you up with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 48 hours, and it's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It's secure online professional counseling. BetterHelp counselors have a broad range of expertise, which may not be available in your area. The service is available for clients worldwide. You just log into your account anytime and send unlimited messages to your counselor. You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, and everything you share is confidential. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so it's easy and free to change counselors if you need. And it's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available. In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp, they're recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Rob, as a podcast listener, get 10% off their first month at BetterHelp.com/RHAP. Visit BetterHelp.com/RHAP and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced BetterHelp professional. Coming to you live from the edge of extinction, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now, here's the guy who's ready to talk about a season that might not be so lame, dude. It is Rob Has a Podcast. Yes, I'm Rob Sestrino. Screwing up the opening already. Dun, 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 dun. Yes, the edge of extinction is season number 36 in our top 40 countdown here tonight. Every week, we are going to be talking about the season that you, the listener, voted in as the best of all time. We are counting them down from top 40 to number one every week here on Rob's Podcast. Tonight, we talk about the 36th best season of all time, Survivor, The Edge of Extinction. And we have a great panel to talk about it. First, we have with us a RHAP podcaster who is the co-host of our brand new Wrestling Rehap Up. Just talked about the Royal Rumble this week. Here is the great Matt Scott. Matt, how are you?
Ooh, come on, Rob. Come on, Rob. Come on, Rob.
Yes.
Come on, Rob. Come on, Rob. Thank you for having me. I'm so happy to be here and representing the Wrestling Rehap Up, of course.
Yes. Okay. Well, happy to have you here, Matt, to talk about the Edge of Extinction. Every week, you could hear Matt and Mari Forth talk about wrestling on our brand new Wrestling Rehap Up in our Rehap Ups podcast feed. Happy to have you here to talk about The Edge. And we're also, I'm very blessed to have with us here tonight the man who helped us come up with the idea for what we wanted to do. I knew that I wanted to talk about the Survivor somehow this season. It was going to be a long Survivor offseason. I was trying to figure out what's the best way. And he said, what if you did a fan poll and counted it down? And he said, that idea? I said, Ari, this is an incredible idea. How can I repay you for this brilliant idea? He said, let me cover The Edge of Extinction. And I said, you got it, dude. Ari Ferrari.
Thank you for having me, Rob. Happy to be just a mere passenger while you pilot this podcast. Because there are only two things I love in this world.
Yes.
The 1990s Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie and Edge of Extinction. So excited to talk about this.
Yes. Okay. I didn't know that you were such a fan of the Ninja Turtle movie.
Best movie ever.
Yes. What about 2 and 3? Okay. Yes. And you know what synergy that you have the WWE title behind you?
Oh, the WWE title. So this comes from the Royal Rumble six-pack challenge that I did with some friends. We did this virtually through Zoom. I have to send it over to my friend Slayer. He ended up winning the six-pack challenge, so I got to send it over to him.
Okay.
I forgot it was there.
All right. Well, very excited to get into everything here tonight. We are live. Maybe we'll take some questions from the YouTube chat along the way. We have questions that were sent in by our listeners. We will not get to them all tonight. Well over 200 questions came in. This weekend in our Patreon podcast feed, I will be talking about more of The Edge of Extinction. Anything that we don't cover here tonight, I will cover in our Patreon podcast feed with Matt Scott. With Matt Price this weekend. Sorry, I got my Matt's confused for a second. Too many.
Hey, I'll show up wherever.
Yeah, Matt S is here tonight. Yeah. Matt P this weekend. I will talk with Matt Price and get into more of your Edge of Extinction questions in our Patreon podcast feed, which you can get at robswebsite.com/patron. Ari, so you were the Edge stan. You said this is the season I want to talk about. What is it about the Edge of Extinction that you wanted to share with us?
I am a sucker for that underdog story. If you've watched Rocky 1, 2, 3, 4, this is such an inspirational, such a motivational season. You could put all the inspirational quotes into a calendar and then you can sell it on Julie's Etsy shop. So it really speaks to that never give up. I love it. It's yeah. great. I'm a sucker for it.
Jeff Probst tells us in the opening minutes of the season that this season is all about finding out when Survivor pushes you further than you could ever imagine. This is your opportunity to stand up, adapt, and conquer. We'll find out tonight if The Edge did just that. Matt, what was it about The Edge of Extinction for you that made you want to talk about The Edge tonight?
Look, The Edge of Extinction... It's an interesting season because I rewatched it like a while back, actually, before rewatching it again for this podcast. And what was interesting is that I just perceived it completely differently. Like, I did not love Rick Devins. I did not love Chris Underwood at all. And now I've kind of come around and I'm willing to show that I've seen the light. I'm here. It's a beautiful new day. And so I definitely want to dive in and talk about it, especially with an edgehead like Ari here.
Edgehead, yes.
So, big time.
Ari, so let me ask you this. Okay, for an edgehead like yourself, a true edger. So... The Edge of Extinction is a story of redemption. Is it possible that what we are doing here tonight is ultimately the story of redemption of the Edge of Extinction? Because I think a lot of us tossed it aside after it was over. And I have to say, coming in, doing this countdown, this is the fifth Survivor season I've watched here in 2021. I thought that this is far and away the best of what I've seen.
Whoa.
The theme is not on trial here.
Yeah.
And so to take over the pilot seat one more time, I'm going to talk to you, the Survivor superfan that's always dreamed of being on Survivor. This is the season for you. Because everyone on that cast, they all came to play. Every single one of those fans are super. And I think Wendy's a super ultra mega fan. Mm-hmm. So it's very relatable.
Yeah, I think that they actually did a good job with the cast. I think that that was a complaint at the time that the cast wasn't great. I mean, you have like very few people that don't bring anything to the table here in this season. And I feel like that my number one metric, Matt, when I'm going through these seasons is like, how engaged am I when I'm watching the episode? And I don't think that there was one boring episode that I think that I might say that the worst episode of the whole season is all the way back at episode 4 when they do the swap for the first time and Rick Devins goes home the first time. I think that might be the biggest dud of the season.
Yeah. And I think the biggest thing for me in watching the season was just that it was so packed with strategy, like constantly there was strategy and it was exciting in that sense. I'll say as someone who loves the characters and loves to see just how they develop over the course of the season and attach to people, I kind of felt like at a loss watching this season because I didn't feel like I got to know, anyone as much as I wanted to get to know them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about all of this. And I guess let's start with through the prism of the edge of extinction as a concept, which fans did not like from jump. And I think that that did put the season in a negative light. I think that we had heard even before Survivor David versus Goliath aired, hey, oh, there's a new twist coming to Survivor. They're going to send people to an island and they don't get voted off. And everybody was up in arms. And so the edge of extinction comes back here, the first of two times we've seen the edge of extinction, but in its infancy. All right, how did the edge play on this rewatch?
It played the biggest role throughout the whole season. So wow. I feel like Reem is your main character, and she walks you through the whole thing, because mm-hmm. every time Reem says something, that's basically anyone that's ever been eliminated. Those are their words as well. So Reem is the edge of extinction. The edge of extinction is another character that's a part of the season as well. And essentially a story is being told through that lens. I mean, you get to hear how much time you spend on the edge. And I think Eric has a really, really good quote where he says, you go into the game and you go from a million to zero.
Yeah.
And so it's just a very good way of explaining how hard that game is. And so there were no guarantees. No one was given any guarantees. And so if we're exploring how far people are willing to go for their second chance, I mean, it's great, because Chris, what he did was he seized the moment. He didn't have a lot of moves that he could make, but the ones that he could make, he definitely optimized mm-hmm. his opportunities to get even higher. And same thing with Rick. He took advantage of everything. I mean, he has the same exact kind of story of being super pumped, excited, energetic, and feeling like he's playing with house money. And if someone like Gavin or Victoria, if they had that, who knows how it could have gone for them?
Yeah. There was a lot of great stuff there. Through the lens of Reem, you know, it is great that you end up getting this unfiltered character who, even in the game, Matt, she is rather unfiltered. You know, she sort of like knows from the jump that, okay, she is in trouble at that first tribal council. So she has very little to gain by sort of like hiding who she is or how she's feeling. And I don't even know if she necessarily could if she wanted to. But then once you get her yeah. at the edge of extinction, there is no reason for her to mince her words at all.
Yeah, and I think the phenomenal thing about Reem is, well, there's a lot that we'll get into about Reem, I'm sure, but just the fact that she has my favorite thing in a Survivor player, which is just the inability to not be yourself. And I think in some points we see Reem just doing her thing, drop kicking. Well, she didn't actually drop kick anyone, but she came close and we missed
she
out there.
At,
from the wrestling perspective, I have to definitely say that. But I think the fact that, you know, we were able to get Reem as this massive character, unfiltered, was amazing. I wish we would have had that with more of the cast along the way. But I think I'm going to be the one who's a little hard on the season. Ari is definitely a huge fan of it. And I have some gripes. This is my time yeah. to take out my gripes
okay.
on the season.
And I have good and bad. I don't want to come in yeah. as that I think that The Edge of Extinction is the greatest of all time. But I do feel like that, especially no. a lot of these seasons that have been at the start of this countdown, I think I came in expecting the worst. And I really just feel like, especially this season, I'm especially positive about it because I do not think that this was a difficult watch at all.
Yeah, and one thing about this season that I think is interesting is that I remember watching it the first time, and I was watching it with friends pretty much the whole season, and we just didn't, like, I don't remember us paying that much attention to the people on the edge because, one, there were so many people on the edge, but, you know, they were voted out. So, you know, someone's going to return, but most of the people on the edge are out of the game. And so I just kind of had a hard time attaching to them going along. Mm-hmm. And on the rewatch, you do see a lot more hints of Chris shining and standing out. Bryce isn't here, so I just have to say, Underwood! Okay, just want to throw that in there. But yeah, it was amazing to actually watch back and like, oh, he's definitely winner material, yeah. which is hard to appreciate the first watch
yeah.
around.
Matt, well, one of the interesting things I saw, and I put this on my Instagram story on Sunday night when I was watching the episodes back, that Jeff brings out the four returning players. And then he goes through each of them and he's like, and none of them have won the game. This game is unpredictable. Cut to Chris Underwood. Chris Underwood. It was right there the whole time, Ari. They told us in episode one.
He's always visible.
Yeah. Really?
And you know what? Because of the Edge, everyone basically has they make their presence felt throughout the whole season. So when people complain about purple edits, everyone gets a little time to shine a little bit.
Oh, we definitely got some
Reem
purple
is
edits.
In every single episode. Yeah. She gives us a great quote every single episode.
No doubt.
Yeah,
there's a lot to say as we talk about the cast, but yeah. That was actually kind of how I felt. The Julia Carter story is infamous now, and I'm sure that we'll talk about Julia at some point.
Yes.
And her very purple edit. But I think just to look at the season more broadly, I mean, even if we got people, and again, this was probably what I didn't like about Rick the first time around, which was just that he had tons of quips and he was hilarious, but I'm like, who is this guy? And it was cool to see him around the loved ones visit, kind of opening up. It was cool to see that about everyone. But it was that point around episode 11, episode 12 that I was reminded, oh, we really know almost nothing about these people, you know, when it comes to just who they are as people, which mm-hmm. is what I'm looking for. But maybe I'm in the minority with that.
Yeah. Certainly it is an uneven edit across the way. And on the second viewing, you know, there is some more if we really go digging, but it's certainly on the first time through that there were definite disparities in, you know, who we really got to see a ton on the show. But sticking with the Edge of Extinction. So in terms of it being interesting, you know, even in the first watch, that the pre-merge of the Edge of Extinction, I actually really did enjoy. I enjoyed. There's a lot of conflict in the pre-merge at the Edge of Extinction, and I feel like that my biggest problem with the Edge of Extinction is like when there's like not anything to do. I didn't like a lot of the structured activities that they send everybody to go look for stuff. I like it when they fight on the edge, and there's fighting here.
And Keith's a catalyst for that. So, you know, don't forget about little Keith. He raises the mast. But in the mm-hmm. first episode, Keith is the young buck. And every time he gets an opportunity to do something a little sneaky, he does it.
Yeah.
And you got to love that. Mm-hmm. So whether it's the clue that he ends up getting from Reem, that causes a lot of fighting. In fact, Keith doing that caused a fight between Reem and Chris, where Chris says, you just let him have it.
Yeah.
And she goes off. She was not. Dude, how dare you? How dare you say that I gave that to him? It's great.
Yeah. Do you know who you're messing with? Yeah. I mean, that's really great stuff. Probably the best Edge of Extinction stuff that we get over two seasons of the Edge of Extinction are these first couple of episodes here. I also think that so Rick, I feel like, doesn't bring a ton to the Edge of Extinction. He's sort of like a little bit like just like a, you know, he's pretty low key on the Edge of Extinction. But then when Aubrey comes in, Matt, then Aubrey becomes like a really good narrator of trying to like she's like a Jim in the Office talking about like these people are all crazy.
Yeah, and even on the first time around, it was interesting to see Aubrey and how painful it was. I mean, even the way that she left the game, I think, was just tough to watch. But you know, the fact that she was there and able to reflect on her mistakes, reflect on the drink, reflect on everyone else who was there from a, you know, I'm standing back, taking it all in perspective, was kind of fun. And I think different for Aubrey. It felt uncomfortable to watch because I really wanted to see her in the game. But it was nice to see that role for her, at least.
Yeah. Ari, the post-merge Edge of Extinction, though, would talk about going from a million to zero. I do feel like that things really slow down. I think we have a couple of interesting moments when War Dog shows up. I'm not sure if that's a secret scene or if that was in like the closing moments of one of the episodes when they fight. I like when Reem has the moment with Kelly Wentworth on the Edge of Extinction, but it really turns into a lot of like reflecting as opposed to a lot of like interpersonal conflict.
Yeah, and just to back to even what I was saying about the you know, the lack of character development, I wonder if what the producers were going for was that the distinction, at least for us as fans sitting at home, is that the game is where all the strategy is happening, and that's where everyone's kind of going at it cutthroat. The Edge is where we really get to know people, and that's something I picked up on. don't know how to feel about it one way or the other. I didn't love it, but that's what I think was happening at the edge.
I definitely picked that up in terms of like, this is what they were going for, but I do not know if they stuck it, because I feel like that there was a lot of times where players are telling us their story, and I feel like we need to see their story more than them tell us. Like, we get from many characters over the course of the season of like, you know, there was a time when things were really crazy for me, and now I've learned that I need to do that. Like, and it just, it's very much, I just, it all sounds the same to me, Ari.
And I think actually, I think that's what the editors meant, where regardless of who was coming back, every single confessional from the edge was supposed to project on whoever was coming back. So anytime you have someone Reem say something about it, if I can, the reason I'm here, you know, her tears, her emotion, whether it's Eric talking about the lesson he's going to teach his kid, you know, these seasons are filmed and then they're edited, right? So they know that Chris is going to come back. So they have to promote him. But if someone like a War Dog did come back, or if Joe ends up coming back, I mean, we're talking about a completely different edited show. So I think all those confessionals, eventually what they were supposed to be is all of these emotions or feelings are being projected on whoever is coming back. Because I guarantee you that one of the main reasons people were pulling for Rick is, all right, he's back and he's taking advantage of it. Mm-hmm. The reason why I think Chris ultimately won was he finally got this second chance. And damn, yo, if I got that chance, that's exactly what I would do. Or they would respect the fact that he just went for it. So I think ultimately the editors, the whole edge is designed for you to, someone was coming back and there were going to be two people that came back anyway, regardless. And they were always going to come back at the final six. Now, the question is, does the person that come back at six, do they make it a three? And not only do they make it a three, but do they become so impressive that they get those 9 jury votes? And I personally don't think that applies to everyone, but Chris took advantage.
Okay, well, let's talk about Chris and talk about how his win shapes our views on the season. Matt, watching Chris come back. Now, you knew Chris was coming back into the game. You knew he was going to end up winning this game. Did that change anything at all for you upon going back and watching this?
It did, because, well, number one, I just saw every single moment that they showed him on screen, and they really sat with him. There was one point, back to your point, Rob, about the very start of the season. I think much later on, when Chris is in the jury, there's a point where I think Jeff is talking about the winners. I wish I could even point out exactly where, but it cuts to Chris. And he's right in the middle of this cluster of, you know, Joe and some others who are sitting there. It's like, okay, we're gonna get Chris coming back. This is gonna be good. I was just waiting for the moment that he returned, because the first time around, I knew there was a lot that he did in the finale and in his final moments on the season, but I didn't really fully appreciate how much it was until I was watching it back this time. Like, whoa, Chris just went into Super Saiyan mode or something, like going off here. So I was a lot more impressed this time, actually, with Chris.
Yeah. Ari, you are the ultimate edger. So talk to us about Chris Underwood's win.
Chris Underwood's win. It feels like the Avengers, where Doctor Strange is looking at Iron Man and he says, there is only one path to victory. That's what it felt like, because Chris having to fail. This story can probably only apply to Chris. If he didn't get voted out at that time, he doesn't win the game. If he comes back the first time, I don't think he wins the game.
Yeah.
I think it's just he took advantage of the opportunities he got, and he just made the most of it, knowing full well I'm probably going to lose, so I might as well have fun doing it.
He was trying to play the perfect game, and ultimately he couldn't do it. You know, Chris does not get a ton of screen time in the first three episodes of the season when he's actually on there. One of our listeners wrote it to say that Chris actually does not even get a confessional in the first episode. Now, are you surprised at how little we see from Chris when he's actually in the game?
I didn't even pick up on it, because I was just watching out for him. But, you know, it didn't surprise me. He didn't do He was the third one out, Rob. Like, there's not much to say there. Mm-hmm. There was a lot. He had a lot more to say after he was out. But I think it felt like the game just sort of like swept him up and took him out, and he was gone. And before we got to know him at all, before we got to hear from him at all, obviously.
You know, I think he was a little bit more on our radar for a couple of reasons, but one of them was that he gave a very colorful interview to Josh Wigler in the pregame where he talked about like the evolution strategy, and he's like, I'm doing it for Monica. And it was like, wow, what a weirdo. That this was something that really like popped out in our heads, that he was somebody who at least like really knew the show. So that maybe to the RHAP listeners, like maybe we had like a little bit more of an eye on Chris Underwood.
Yeah. And I think there was something there, but compared with other people who, I don't know what David Bloomberg would say about what his archetype
was. Don't
get
him started.
Chris, I won't. Sorry, David. Mm-hmm. But you know, I just kind of felt underwhelmed by Chris. I didn't see anything coming from him because we weren't getting so much of him, especially as like the strong, muscular white man on a season, young white man on a season. Like, you expect to see more because that's traditionally what we get. We didn't get that. So I figured, let's forget about Chris because he's not going that far, which
that's how they get you.
That's how they get you. Come on, Jeff Probst. He's going, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
What'd you want, Matt? Did you want more scenes of him fishing?
Yeah, a lot more scenes of him fishing.
Got a stingray. Yeah. Eric was going to tell his kids about that day. That was exciting.
That was nice.
Yeah. So, all right. So Chris comes back. He wins the Edge of Extinction Challenge, comes back at 6. And then he is shot out of a cannon. He does come back into the game with a hidden immunity idol in his pocket, but he needs to get through that first vote. He does not win immunity at the final 6. So he does need to survive that one vote to get to the final 5 when he will have an idol. All right, does it bother you that Chris comes back with an advantage?
They try to have it both ways. They gave him a split one, something that he can give to someone else, create some drama for the next time. But ultimately, for me, I don't like it.
No.
If they do the edge again, do not give them another another idol. Because automatically, having an idol will automatically make you look cool in front of the jury, no matter what. Whether you give it to someone else, whether you use it on yourself, it's always going to look cool. So it's an automatic line on the resume there. So I didn't like it, but they try to have it both ways by having to split one.
Matt, correct me if I'm wrong. So Natalie, when she came back from the Edge of Extinction in season 40, now she did not get an automatic idol. She had an idol that she bought with fire tokens, and then she came back and that, or did she find an idol once she got back?
No, I'm pretty sure, and correct me if I'm wrong on this.
Oh, the chat will.
Chatters. But yeah, she that was, it was interesting thinking about season 40 because I had more negative feelings about her buying all of her advantages and coming back in and all that stuff. But that's another story. But yes, that's how she came back into the game with that idol.
Yeah. Ari, that's interesting also that, you know, we've seen the Edge of Extinction a second time. We've seen Natalie come back, get to the end, and lose. Does that change the way that we are looking at this Chris Underwood win, where that people at the time said, yes, of course the person that comes back from the Edge of Extinction is going to win? Does it actually make it more impressive that Chris was able to come back and win as opposed to Natalie, who came back and did not have an automatic win?
I think Chris's last run really set the bar high to really screw over Natalie.
That could have happened too.
I really think if Chris didn't win, I think there's a better chance maybe Natalie gets a couple of more votes.
Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you didn't make the fire.
Just based on the interviews, yeah. I think Chris really set the bar so high, not just getting the idol played on him, but slaying the Rick Devin's dragon, going to fire, and really, really putting himself out there and putting at risk.
Yeah.
The other Edge returner did not take advantage of slaying that dragon, right? She sat out. So I think he set the bar so high.
Yeah. Mark in the chat says that she bought one and then she found one. So that was the story of
Thank
Natalie.
Thank you, Mark.
Story of Natalie with the idols in season 40. Okay. So Rick comes back. And this was actually very interesting to go back. The final 6 vote in this season is super interesting how Chris ends up playing this, because he ends up reuniting with Rick Devins, but he also comes back and then, you know, he has all of this information. He ends up like bonding with Julie after he gets a note from Ron Clark. He gives that to her. That's not in the episode, but that was one of the reasons that they were able to bond. He helps Julie with the puzzle. She takes him on the reward. And then also we have this interaction between Chris and Lauren. And it was very good timing for us this week that Lauren O'Connell did an interview with Dalton Ross this week, where she really got inside what went on at the final six vote and why she played her idol for Chris Underwood at the final six. And basically, what she was trying to do was to that she thought that, okay, if she played the idol, Chris was going to put his one vote on Victoria and that she would be able to knock Victoria out there without having to cast a vote for her. Correct? Yeah, do I have that story right?
No, that all adds up. Mm-hmm. That adds up. And I think the biggest thing for me, Lauren was really fascinating to watch, especially at that point in the season, because I feel like at some point, you know, it just kind of comes up like Lauren's not the biggest gamer. She's not here for the game. And we were seeing her. I loved watching her in the season. I loved watching her thrive and show up. When it came to that point, the thing that blows my mind about Lauren, and maybe we're not going here, is just the moment that she's voted out and she walks out and she's the best sport about it. And maybe it's like being a college athlete and all of that, but I wish she would have been more angry and more fired up. Like I want her going off when she's voted out, especially for making, you know, decisions that probably aren't the best decisions toward the end game.
Yeah.
She was always hungry, but never hangry.
She was definitely not hangry.
Yeah. She got sick at one point in the pre-merge, and you hear a couple of players, you know, Rick and Wardog, talk about like, that, you know, she's not really playing. They sort of discount her. And I do think that probably rubbed off on us, the viewer, in terms of like, okay, well, she's not like a serious person, but all right, she does make a run at the end.
Well, she was considered a challenge beast. I don't think she ever ended up winning any immunities, but I think people just ended. What was it that she said to Dalton Ross interview? Her strategy was to like kill people with kindness, right? So I think people just dug that, right? And then she eliminated, or was a part of eliminating, people that stood in her way, like Wardog.
Yeah. Chris Underwood, okay, he survives that vote at the final six, okay, gets Lauren to play her idol. The final five, this was exciting, but this was like, I felt like kind of like a big mess here. And I don't think it was necessarily all survivors' fault, but we end up with a tribal council here at the final five of this game, in which four players play idols, and that two of them are fake. There was a lot of stuff going on. It ends up with where all three of the guys are immune because of necklaces and idols. And ultimately, that's when we see Lauren go home. Ari, are things going sideways at this point when we get to the final five?
They've been going sideways from the moment Chris came back. I mean, at that point, so this is that tribal council. According to everyone there, according to them, as far as they know, they're safe. So everybody going in thought they were safe.
Yeah.
There was Chris with the idol. There was Lauren with her fake idols. She thought going in, like, all right, this may not work. It might not work. Yeah. Julie, she had the fake idols. She was ready to play that. Gavin made the deal with Rick thinking he was going to get the idol. So everyone going in thought they were safe sitting in those seats until it's revealed that none of the idols are real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And ultimately, that's when Lauren is going to end up going home. Matt, how'd you feel about that?
Well, about that tribal council in general, I really felt, and again, picked up on this week watching back, like Rick Devins, I believe, overplayed at that moment. Like, he was doing way too much. He was doing a bunch of things he didn't need to do. He didn't need to hide two fake idols for Lauren and Julie to pick up. Like, I didn't really see the bet. I mean, maybe I'm too results oriented.
I think he was bored.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah. He seemed a little bored. And it's like, okay, Rick, we get it. Like, you're going to win if you make it to the final three, but, you know, you have to get there first. And this didn't, I don't think this did him any favors.
Yeah. So just to talk that through. So Rick is going to go out looking for the idol, but does he plants the fake idols before he finds the real one, Ari? So is that to sort of like throw people off the scent of that he was going to put the fake idols out there, so he thought that they would be found, so he would go out there and find the real one? But then he didn't take the fake ones back after he found the real one?
He planted those before he found his. That way, he keeps them distracted, keep them looking at other places. So, although, they probably should have realized there wouldn't be two new ones planted.
Yeah, that would seem unlikely to have two new idols planted at the final five. But, you know, Rick is a showman, and that's what he did. Ultimately, okay, they get rid of Lauren there, and then we get to the final four. And at the final four, that's when Chris Underwood, he's going to win that immunity challenge, and he's going to put himself into the fire. Do you think this was necessary, Ari? Could he have won without doing this?
I'm going to say it was necessary.
Okay.
If he's sitting next to Rick, it's not happening.
Okay.
If someone else knocks Rick out.
Yes.
I think we're looking at maybe a Gavin winner.
Yeah, if Gavin knocked out Rick, you think Gavin would win, Matt?
I think he does.
I don't know, honestly. I think this is where I found myself getting really twisted up, where I was thinking about all of the different scenarios that could have happened this season, especially with Rick and Chris being voted out third and fourth. And so, you know, I'm not sure, but I think it was really interesting that the jury was really on the fence when we did get to the finale and when everyone was deliberating. Maybe Gavin has it, but I still think that the relationships that Chris had on the edge were what really put him over the edge, no pun intended. And so I still think he could have won. I don't think it would have been 4-9 or 9-4. But I think he could have eked out the win there.
Let's talk about Gavin, because Gavin ends up playing the game that Chris did not play. He plays for 39 days straight. All right. Do you feel like that Gavin got a newfound respect for you on your multiple rewatches?
Well, how did you know it was multiple? Absolutely. I was surprised, not only, and he says it at the end, but I was surprised when I look back, he was a part of the majority at every single vote, and he won a couple of immunities. It's pretty tough to eliminate someone if they win the immunities. Mm-hmm. So I was very surprised. So this is where I was at. I was pretending. I like to pretend I'm on the show. So I was pretending I was on the jury. And at first I was like, oh, Chris has got this. And then once Gavin starts talking a little bit about what he was doing and reminding us that he was a part of every majority, I was like, oh, you know what? Maybe Gavin does have an actual argument here.
So where did he go wrong then, Ari?
I think just those people, I think ultimately, like Matt said, the relationships do ultimately just go to Chris. I feel like it had nothing to do with Gavin as so much as Chris impressed the people on the jury and basically said, I would have done what Chris did.
Yeah. Just to fact check, because I know we will get comments about this. So he votes for Aurora Gavin at the Kelly Wentworth vote. And then he also, vote for Rick when Victoria goes home, and a vote for Chris when Lauren goes home. But I think that in some of those instances that he might have known that an idol could have been played.
All right, we'll deduct points for that.
Yes. Matt, how about for you, Gavin's journey here this season?
You know, it's tough because I was a Gavin fan the first watch, and then I think This is my theory. Like, based on the jury, I don't think Gavin was exciting enough for people. He wasn't exciting TV. And, you know, I hate to beat this point home, but it's like, who is Gavin as a character, as a person? Like, give that to me. And I kind of feel like that also was something that the player's experience, because I remember on the loved one visit when he's talking about, you know, I moved up my wedding by a week and got married 2 days before coming out here, and he's fighting back tears and nobody knew that before. And I just don't think that the other players, like, they definitely really loved him, but I don't think they knew him at the time enough to get attached to him. And contrasting that with Chris, I mean, Reem goes from hating Chris, wanting to, I'm not going to point fingers, but Reem might have murdered Chris on that island if others didn't show up. Reem, yeah, I'm a little terrified,
Chris,
of Reem.
You better watch out, dude. You're getting on my last nerve.
See, she turned around, though. Mm-hmm. She loved him by the end. That says a lot about the relationship. Yeah. So I do think that Chris still had a lot going for him. And Gavin was lacking just in terms of some of that social game. And I think just sharing of himself in a way that we might see someone like Chris, or I think of Island of the Idols and Tommy just being great at sharing himself to bond with people. And we did not get that with Chris, with Gavin.
Yeah, I think one of the interesting things that I noticed about Gavin as we try to reconnect Ari as he dropped off momentarily. I think that a big part of the problem for Gavin was sort of like the marketing of what he was doing, because we hear him say in the episode, even before War Dog says that he needs to get rid of his mentor, Kelly Wentworth. Mm-hmm. Gavin says the same thing about Eric, of that, hey, that he's going to get all the credit. I'm going to be overshadowed by Eric. I need to get rid of him. But I feel like that is not really seen as his move or something where he's given a lot of credit for that. If anything, it's like there's only negative credit for doing that.
Yeah. And I think that's, and I hate to even like point at these things for Gavin's game, because for all we know, maybe he was trying to put in some of that work to really kind of get himself over, as people would say in wrestling terms. Sorry, I've been doing the wrestling podcast for a little bit too long, Rob, but, you know, kind of get in favor with everyone. You know, if he was doing that, great. But I didn't get a sense that was happening. And oftentimes we'll get from players, you know, they'll sneak in their accomplishments and they're really witty with how they do it. But yeah, that wasn't Gavin. Gavin was just Gavin. And I would have loved to see a little bit more of that scheming. And we didn't get that from him. Sadly.
Yeah. Even at the final tribal council, his body language just looked a little bit. And again, he's out there 39 days. So, you know, I don't think necessarily defeated, but that I did not feel like that he came across with the confidence that Chris did at that final tribal council.
Yeah, and just thinking about that for a second, I think there's a lot to dissect about, like, the jury and how they perceive people and why they perceive people certain ways. But with this jury, the reason why I think that they were just so much more accustomed to a bigger, flashier player is because, looking at this season, we had four returning players who definitely made their mark on the game, but specifically, like, I feel like maybe it was the David Wright influence a little bit, but everyone was really trying to, like, play it up to the camera between David and Rick and others. And so I kind of do wonder, you know, if people would have just looked at his game more purely if it weren't the cast of characters that we had this time. But I think because of people like David and Rick, you're looking for excitement. You're looking for a lot of excitement in the process.
Yeah. All right. We were just talking about the final tribal council, just the mindset of Gavin facing a jury that might have been more hostile towards him than they were to Chris.
And especially because he had no idea what those people were talking about. He didn't know much about the actual twist itself and the relationships that were built there. He was at a huge disadvantage. I mean, if we're always talking about how information is power, Chris had a lot and Gavin had absolutely none. I mean, even those that got voted out towards the end, they had something for Chris and they got his vote too. So Gavin was at a huge disadvantage.
You know, Gavin tries to make the argument about how he was there the whole time, 39 days, and Chris wasn't. And I forget, is it Julia or is it War Dog who says that, you know, look, you're on trial. The theme isn't on trial.
It's War Dog. He War says Dog. The theme's not on trial. It's you three.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So is there an argument that he could have made? Because I feel like the coming in, he's like, okay, well, this is my ace in the hole. I'll just tell them that, you know, I didn't get voted out and he did. So that's why you should vote for me.
Well, I think it depends on the person, right? I mean, you got someone like War Dog. I think his big thing is Gavin didn't seem to make any big moves. Mm-hmm. So I think it does depend on the person, right? Kelly voted for Gavin. She liked him. She worked with him. And then you have someone like War Dog. You need to appeal to people's different, you know, their personalities. What are they there for? I don't think Gavin was ever going to get someone like Reem's vote, first boot. She never got to know him at all as a person. And you know, like she said, if everyone's got diary of the mouth when they're coming in, they're probably not spilling anything about what Gavin's doing.
Yeah. And just to add to that, number one, I think it wasn't well played to position him being in the game proper as being above the edge of extinction experience, especially for everyone who was living out there, killing themselves, or at least that's what Jeff and everyone wanted us to think, you know, that it was so rough out there. I mean, yeah, I would even push back with what you said, Ari, because if Gavin's taking those tribal councils along the way as opportunities to shine, like really catering to the jury along the way, giving people credit, giving people moments and things that resonate, like he could have been in a much better position at the end. I don't know. I mean, Rob, like to your question, I'd probably just throw out the argument around, oh, I'm in the game. It's great. I think that people would appreciate the strategy and a lot of those elements, but what you want to do is actually the opposite. Like give credit to the people on the edge. Like, oh man, I don't know what that was like. I don't know.
I don't think I could have done it.
I don't think I could have done it. And I didn't have to do it because I stayed in the game X, Y, Z. So I think that you have to be really careful, but
yeah,
I think that's Gavin.
Every day that I couldn't go on here, I just thought about you all out there on the edge. And that just gave me the juice to keep going, to keep fighting.
Come on, Rob.
Because I knew you were out there. And if you could do it, I could do it.
Come on, Rob.
All I wanted is to not be there. My biggest fear. It's a scary place, Edge of Extinction.
It is scary, yeah, based on the stories that you hear about there. Okay. Chris's win. Is that the biggest factor why people don't like the season? If there had been even Rick Devin's winning, Matt, if there would have been, because and we'll talk about who would win also if there was no Edge of Extinction. But say Rick goes on to win the season. Are people feeling a lot different in terms of the rankings?
Absolutely. People are feeling a lot different in terms of the rankings because, I mean, when Rick was voted out and came back into the game, we got this completely mm-hmm. different character. So he started out really lighthearted. Oh, I'm just the anchor. I'm here to make a quip here and there. And he's voted out, comes back, and he has a vengeance. And it's one thing I'll say that's also really impressive about Rick is that even after he's out after fire, you know, we kind of get this like, oh, hey, like, oh, I'm just, yeah, good luck in the final three. But he is not happy. And, you know, I think that people would have loved to see Rick as the winner. But, you know, that's also because he wouldn't have come back so late in the game. And he actually did have time to play the game.
Yeah. Ari, how about for you?
I think people were rooting ultimately for Rick, but I think more people were rooting for Victoria.
Yes.
I think that's where the really big difference comes in.
Yeah.
Or even if someone like Reem were to come back.
Interesting.
But
yeah, there's a lot of different sliding doors in terms of how the season would have gone. Because I think it's also like the fan base at large, like the average, like the casual viewer. If Rick Devins wins the season, I think that, you know, that he is like a, you know, all-time Survivor figure. But I do feel like that in the Survivor podcast world where, you know, Reddit, where we're so like ensconced in it, that I do feel like that people that, oh, you're trying to put Rick Devins over so much. You're making him like Roman Reigns of you're shoving Rick Devins down our throat. Now we don't want Rick Devins to win. And then it was like such a turnabout. When then he doesn't win, then the same people were like, why did Chris Underwood win? Rick Devins should have won.
Those same people would have been very excited for the Aubrey win. Mm-hmm. If Aubrey came back, if she slayed it, it would have been a completely different story.
Yeah,
but I think ultimately it's not so much Chris. It might be just the theme in general. People just don't like it.
People don't like
it. I like it though. I'm I'm here to be entertained.
Yes. So one of the things that I've been thinking about with this was when I had the chance to talk to Jeff Probst before season 40, we were talking a little bit about, like, the Edge was on people's minds. We knew it was coming back for this season. And, you know, one of the things I had raised to him was, well, like, well, what about, like, if people, you know, you could do the Edge, but just, like, stop it at the merch. Because I don't think anybody would really complain if you had the Edge of Extinction for six episodes and then somebody comes back at the merge and then that was that. But what Jeff said was, like, look, we feel like that we always have to pay off the theme in the finale. If we open it, that this is we're telling a cinematic story, and so we start with the theme of the Edge of Extinction and we have to carry it all the way through to the end of the season. And I think that's one of the reasons why they end up giving an idol to Chris at the final six, is that I think they really wanted somebody from the Edge of Extinction getting to that final three so that the theme would be part of that final tribal council and sort of pay off the season, for better or for worse.
They definitely stacked the deck, I think, a little bit too much in that direction. And this is kind of where it's tough, because Survivor, I think, does such a great job in just ensuring that the game is a pretty fair game, like, in terms of the structure of it and the challenges and everything else. But with this, they were definitely pushing the story more. And I mean, something I picked up along the way was just that Jeff was really big on pushing that the Edge is a horrible place to live on. And we were getting that beaten into us each and every week, one way or the other. And I think there are a few other times where we saw him kind of being upset, maybe about people not taking the theme so seriously. Again, I'm thinking of Julia Carter when she was voted out, the epic vote. But they didn't need to stack the deck like that. We would have been a lot happier if they didn't do it that way. Like, bring him back at the final eight, maybe, or something like that. That might do something
Jeff
for the
they would
rankings.
Consider that. Yeah.
Thanks, Jeff. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Here's a way to rehab it. How about, instead of another challenge, how about they vote them in like they did in Pearl Island?
Yeah. I would like that.
I think that'd be a little bit more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A little more politics involved.
There's definitely a lot they could do to punch up the idea. And then we saw what punching up the idea could look like for season 40. But I still think that the Edge of Extinction has a lot of potential if it's tweaked a little bit more. But okay. That's a whole different
discussion.
Let's not
get too carried away about the all the potential of the Edge.
There's potential, Rob. You have to believe. It's a possibility. Anything could happen, right?
Believe in yourself.
Yeah,
believe in yourself. That's the lesson I learned on the Edge.
I learned that lesson in the Amazon too. This episode of the podcast will be right back to talk about the returning players from the Edge of Extinction. But if you've had a stressful day like me, let me tell you about the Theragun, the brand new Gen 4 Theragun. Doesn't just feel good, it gets to the source of the pain by releasing tension using Theragun's signature percussive therapy, which goes 60% deeper than vibration alone. Don't let the stress of daily life weigh on your body. Whether you're an elite athlete or someone like me just trying to make it through the day tension-free, Theragun can help. The brand new Gen 4 Theragun is the handheld percussive therapy device that releases your deepest muscle tension using a scientifically calibrated combo of depth, speed, and power. And it's as quiet as an electric toothbrush and as relaxing as getting a mud rub from Rick Devins or War Dog. Just to show you just how quiet it is, I'm going to turn the Theragun Gen 4 on for you so you can hear it. And let me go ahead. Oh boy, whether you want to treat your muscle tension from working out or an injury or just the stress of everyday life, there's no substitute for the Theragun Gen 4. The OLED screen and design make you feel like you're holding something from the future. Just go to their site and check it out, and the Theragun app learns from your behaviors and suggests guided routines. Theragun is trusted by 250 professional sports teams like Real Madrid and elite athletes like Paul George, DeAndre Hopkins, Maria Sharapova, and hundreds of customers and me. So I'm telling you, Theragun Gen 4 is great for sore hamstrings or, like I get, the occasional tech neck in the shoulders from looking at too many computers and phones. Try Theragun for 30 days, starting at only $199. Go to Theragun.com/RHAP right now and get your Gen 4 Theragun today. That's Theragun.com/RHAP. Theragun.com/RHAP. Let me power this thing down and get back to the podcast. Let's talk about the returning players aspect of this season, because that's a big part of this season to start things off. Again, this is like a mishmash of different things this season. And while I think that this is a really fun season, it is a very messy season, especially when we get to the post-merge game, that it's very hard to follow everything that's going on. But we start off the season with four returning players. Survivor brings back Kelly Wentworth, David Wright, Joe Anglim, and Aubrey. And we have two captains on each team for the first time. We have done this before a number of times with one captain per tribe, but Survivor brings back two captains for each tribe. And Ari, I do feel like that of all the things that we're talking about with the Edge of Extinction, I feel like that I think they could have done without captains and returning players. Do you think that that would have really altered the season to have made that choice?
I think Jeff really wanted Joe to come back and win. Mm-hmm. Especially after watching the last episode, he is so weird with Joe.
That did not hold up. That Jeff begging Joe Anglim to come back for a fourth time. So I think that again that this is anecdotal at best. Okay, but from what I understand, that this was at the time that Survivor went. I believe that they went in a different direction than having Lynn Spillman cast the show. And I believe that they were a little short in terms of their cast for the show. And I think that it was on somewhat short notice that they said, okay, let's bring in some returnees to round out this cast. And then that's why I think you end up with the odd number of four returnees coming back for this cast. All right. Have you ever heard that?
I have not heard that. No, I'm not deep in the Reddit weeds. If mm-hmm. that's where it comes from.
Yeah.
No.
At the time, I think we knew about the rumors. I don't know. Was it leaked at the time of that Joe, Kelly, David were in the mix, and Aubrey was the one that nobody knew. And Ari, do you remember that at the time that the Survivor, all of the Reddit and Twitter, do you remember who they thought the fourth returnee was?
I have no idea. I'm on the edge of my seat.
Yes. Ooh. Everybody for a weekend thought Chrissy Hoffbeck was the fourth returnee for the Edge of Extinction. Nobody knew it was Aubrey.
That would have been incredible to see.
Except for Josh Wiggler, who saw her at the airport.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is he the one who leaked it?
I don't think he didn't. It wasn't leaked. Nobody knew. So those were the four returnees. And so the returnees really do not have a great shot in this game, that Aubrey and Joe from the jump are sort of just marked for death by Kama. And while Kelly and David have much more of a foothold over at Manu/Lesu, that they are never able to work together in any meaningful way. And it's frustrating, even on the rewatch, of no, you two should just work together.
It's fascinating. Mm-hmm. On one tribe, you've got Kama, where Joe and Aubrey, they didn't stand a chance. They weren't going far with those group of people. But they're forced to work together just based on that. Then we go to Manu, and you have David and Kelly just circling each other the whole time. One knows they're not going to work with the other.
On again, off again.
Yeah, but that's the tribe that loses every single tribal.
Yeah,
that's the tribe that doesn't even but they're so good. They hold off a little bit before they mm-hmm. actually make the move. So mm-hmm. it's just very fascinating. But all four of them, they didn't stand a chance. Not with this group.
Yeah.
It actually made me think, though, that maybe that's the strategy. Like, if you're the returning players, come in and just gun for each other. And you have the two different sides. And then, you know, if you're in the middle as a new player, you're choosing one of the sides. And maybe there's some manipulation in there that's like, okay, if you're on David's side, yeah, let's not go after Kelly. Let's go after, you know, let's go after Wardog this time or something. So I thought that was actually really interesting, especially looking at the fact that Aubrey and Joe were out so early. Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't, I mean, I don't think it was a bad thing that David and Kelly were kind of going at it.
Yeah, they were going after each other. And you know what? And you're right, that did serve as like a shield for them, where people are like, okay, yeah, well, they're fighting with each other. Okay, we don't need to necessarily target either one of them because they're always going after each other. And then as soon as David Wright was out of the game, that shield was gone and Kelly ends up going out in the same episode. So there's some symmetry there. Yeah. For Aubrey and for Joe, Aubrey gets, you know, a rough deal here in this game. Nobody wants to work for Aubrey. There's a lot of things in the edit that I actually really think are very fun in this season. While it may not be fair to Aubrey, that I did love in the second episode when they go through how Aubrey cycles through, oh, I really like you, let's have a dialogue. I think there's a lot of like actually really well done, like editing choices that they make across this season that I really noticed here on this rewatch. And so that was fun. But Aubrey is never able to get it going, Ari.
But though I feel like the people she was playing with never, no matter what she said, they weren't about that life.
No.
Ron wasn't into that. Victoria wasn't into that. And, you know, that's all it takes.
Only Aurora.
Two people to, yeah.
That was it. Yeah. That was the only person that wanted to be friends with Aubrey.
I love Aurora. What a great character.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think Aurora is phenomenal to think about because she was just doing her own thing. Like, she does not mince words at all. And I liked that we saw her kind of attaching to the returnees a little bit. I thought that was a strange choice because, I mean, looking back at it, like, it's the right choice to pick off Aubrey. It's the right choice to pick off Joe. But hey, I think, you know, again, looking at Aubrey specifically, like, I think she could have done something to stay in the game. I have a lot of faith in Aubrey. Like, I would have loved to see her pushing even more rather than going for a, like, kumbaya, we're all friends.
Well, she hates kumbaya Survivor.
Victoria. Yeah, well, look, she should hate it because it didn't work out too well for her, but she tried it.
She does have an idol. She has an extra vote also when she gets voted out. In fairness to Aubrey, that they really rope-a-doped her.
Oh, yeah.
And she says it. You guys are unbelievable players.
They got it. They got her good. You know, as somebody who has been blindsided on Survivor, you know, you don't always see it coming. Easier on TV to spot it.
And when you have a royal flush, what do you do? I don't know.
She doesn't know. She doesn't know how to play with the cards. Let's talk about Joe here, because I don't know what to do with Joe here on this season. He is there. What we see on the show is fine, but we hear the accounts of, you know, famously Julia Carter, you know, has well documented some bad behavior by Joe. Certainly, if you've been following along on the social medias of late, that more stuff that you're probably not going to love, not going to get any money from Sia, I don't think, anytime soon. This is something that I'm struggling with here on the rewatch of the show of like, how do we let the, you know, unseen events or future events shape how we view what's on the screen?
First and foremost, like, we didn't have to see much of Joe. So that was the great thing about it.
Yeah.
We saw him taken out pretty early. That was also pretty great. And I think looking at the unseen events, like everything that was happening. So because I think it's so important just to kind of like talk about what happened, because so many times we use coded language, like on the island from Julia Carter's account. Joe, not by name, but it was Joe using the N-word a couple of times, not directly at Julia, but just referring to pop culture in ways that made her and some others like Ron Clark uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And like,
I think they were doing
that,
like a charade game or something.
Some kind
I don't know what kind of lunatic that's the answer.
Yeah, I don't know what that was all about, but I think the thing was interesting to see was just actually looking at Julia and Ron and some of their interactions, even the, you know, when the Edge ended, and just to kind of see how she was portrayed, knowing that that happened, was kind of hard to watch. But I didn't feel like we didn't see that much of Joe, except for the finale when he clearly seemed like Jeff's favorite person. Strange choice.
Yeah.
But,
and to add to the Julia story, I had an interview with her over the summer, and what she had talked about there, and you know, she's spoken about this, you know, in other venues, that what she was really disappointed in was that there was a conversation that the Comet Tribe had where they talked about, like, hey, you know, and this was a lot with Ron Clark about, you know, talking about, like, hey, like, this is not okay. You should not say that. And she had felt like they had had like a really positive conversation, and that was something that they chose to leave out of the show. And she was very public about that after the season. And it was something that, you know, she really regretted that they left it on the cutting room floor, when that could have been something that we could have seen on the show.
I would have preferred to have seen that rather than him painting the flag. That's all we got out of him. He's painting the flag.
Yeah.
That's all he did.
Yeah.
Worst showing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we didn't even see the worst part. Worst showing of Joe.
Yeah. Joe does not really seem to have the ability to adapt his game here in the, you know, in the third time out. Ari, it was just like a lot more of the same.
He said the word nards. That was like, that's all he says. And that's pretty much it.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, all they're showing you is him winning challenges. All right. That's nice. Twirling his mustache as far as it goes.
Yeah. It was a wild mustache. Meanwhile, for David and Kelly over on Manu, Matt, I think that this is an incredible tribe, the Manu tribe.
For what reason, Rob?
I just thought that, I mean, take a look at this tribe. This is, how many great characters do we have over on this tribe? Reem, you know, Keith gave you stuff. Wendy is so underappreciated. Love Big Wendy. We have the winner of the season, Chris. David and Kelly, Rick Devins, War Dog, and Lauren. I mean, this is like where's the dud?
I know, and I would almost like to see, this is where it would be really nice to have just like a spin-off season where we get all the people who are, you know, not like a second chance, it's truly, but like a first and second and third boots, because we get a lot of really exciting people just from this season alone who are booted out early on pre-merge. I if you're thinking of memorable characters or characters who aren't memorable, it's not going to be one of the first five or six people voted out, most of whom are from Manu. But phenomenal personalities, and I want more of them. I want more of all of them, actually.
Yeah.
Give me more Big Wendy.
Big Wendy.
Yeah, releasing the
Wendy. Chicken. Is so great. I did not appreciate Big Wendy enough when she was there, but she calls herself the wild card. Her with the chickens, even her like pre-chickens, like talking about how she didn't want to vote against Reem. She is just really, really great during the time that she's in the pre-merge, Ari.
Yeah.
And it makes the other players think, maybe I should keep her. Oh, she's great. She's wonderful.
Yeah.
The best Wendy, thing. Big Wendy fan.
Big Wendy fan. And the biggest thing about Big Wendy that stood out to me this time watching was, like, I didn't even realize she had a Big Wendy necklace. Did everyone else know this but me? Like, what? Come on.
She does ask Jeff to call her Big Wendy on her way out the door. And Matt, she got very close to winning the Returnee Challenge. She was right there. She was like the first one to get her ball up there, and then it just falls out. And also she's battling, is it Tourette's that she's dealing with? And she's and she's like going through it all. I mean, imagine Big Wendy comes back into the game at the merge.
I know. What a story.
What a story. I don't know how far she would have gone getting back. You could probably say the same
for
a few people.
They would never vote for her.
Really?
Is that Ari? Okay, so Big Wendy comes back in at the merge. Do you think that she's a target at any point?
No. But and then she takes out Rick Devins and fire and wins the game.
Rick Devins no. comes back into the game at four or at six.
Oh, you know what? I forgot about this alternate history.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah.
No, Wendy's huge. She's I'll give her the credit. She's big on stirring the pot. She left the chicken. She'll find something that'll piss everyone off. She'll find some chickens and let them loose.
One of the things, Matt, with the chickens that's so great is so Big Wendy, after she has her master plan, she releases the chickens. There's a couple of times. It happens once with Eric and once with Aubrey, where they're doing their confessionals and they're sitting there and the chicken like walks into frame. The chicken is like in the background. It's just some really fun stuff that we get in the season in terms of the edit.
Why didn't they catch the chickens? Why didn't they run?
Because it's hard to catch a chicken.
They tried. It was a whole...
They're hungry. The chicken was... Especially for Aubrey, the chicken was about 5 feet away from her. That's definitely what it was. And you know what? She should have just dove onto the chicken. That would have been an all-time Aubrey moment. Legendary. Gifts everywhere.
Matt, whenever I've seen Survivor players catch chickens, it's like they need like four of people to like surround it.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of chicken catching here in the last couple of weeks, and that's seemingly how Survivor players do it. They gotta, all right, everybody, come on, let's get around it. It's like you have to huddle around the chicken, then somebody makes the dive.
Fair enough.
Got to coordinate that. We have talked surprisingly little about Rick Devins so far, and he is sort of like the person who is most omnipresent throughout the entire season. Ari, how does Rick Devins hold up for you in The Edge of Extinction?
I feel like he holds up a little bit better. When I was first watching it, I was just like in the Twitterverse. There was a lot of Rick, way too much Rick. Mm-hmm. But then you realize the reason why there's so much Rick is he's making things happen. He's actually doing things that are worth putting on camera. I mean, whoever finds the idol will be on television. And also, one thing you realize about Rick Devins, he plays his game at Tribal Council. He does a lot of side comments that really inspire people to do crazy things. So mm-hmm. it makes me appreciate him a little bit more because he's making things happen, like in the jungle and at Tribal. Like he's always playing. He's always grinding, man. Survivor's a grind.
Yeah. Matt, how about for you?
Yeah. So with Rick, I appreciated his personality the first time around. And I kind of felt like, okay, like we get it. You want to be on TV. You're a great character. I didn't appreciate his strategy until my second time watching the season where I kind of saw like, okay, Rick has always been, you know, he has the idols. He has the fake idols. He's pulling off all these flashy moves. And I kind of thought of it from like the showman perspective as opposed to like, this guy's really strategic and just pulling a lot of rabbits out of the hat. And I appreciated watching it back again because it's like he's doing so much in mm-hmm. the game. And it's kind of a wonder that he made it as far as he did.
Yeah. I love Rick Devins. That I think that he's so much fun to have in this season. As far as though being like the strategic mastermind, like he gets the edit of the strategic mastermind, but he really is not. He's on the wrong side of a lot of these votes. And a lot of times, like he's just really pissed off of he comes back into the game. And then when the whole thing with the Lesu 3, and then they vote for, they vote against him at the merge, right? They try to vote him, back out of the game. Right. He just is like really annoyed. And then it's so great. The next episode, War Dog tries to bring Manu back together. And he's like, yeah, so, Rick Devins, so we should all work together. And he's like, yeah, oh, I'd love that. That would be great. And War Dog is going to, I was like, no, I would not want to work with you.
It's just like emotional Rick Devins.
it's really great when he has that conversation with Dave Wright. We talked about it all the time during the season of he says, Dave Wright's like, I don't know if I'm drunk or you're drunk, and Rick Devins like, you are dreaming,
you're getting played
and he doesn't and then he doesn't end up being part of that and then he again that but then at the same time like we talk about, he's playing the game at Tribal Council. in that he's on the wrong side of that Eric vote. But the next tribal council is the Julia vote. And that's when, and he's really the person who gets that going of like turning the tide against Julia. She says, you know, you're such a passenger, Rick, but it's really Aurora who kind of gives the game away at that tribal council. And she's like, Rick, you're not even like, you're not even part of the plan. And he's like, yeah, well, I think you just told me I'm not part of the plan. So I got to make my own plan. I thought that's a really exciting moment in the season.
No, it's beautiful. And Julie jumping ship was just phenomenal.
I'm jumping
to see.
Ship.
Yeah, she's someone who definitely grew on me as this watch went along. Mm-hmm. But I think another thing about Devins and also about David Wright, and I noticed this after, you know, we see like, I think it's David misplaying the idol. And he just plays it off. He's like, oh, whatever. You know, I'm glad that I played it. I'm glad that you're safe. No big deal. Whereas someone else might look at that and say, that was a huge mistake. Mm-hmm. You want to keep your idols and use them when you're supposed to be using them. And I think Devins has that thing too, where he's not only like reframing things in front of the jury, but I got the sense he has a little bit of that David Wright, like, okay, I'm just going to reframe this in confessionals and I'm going to tell the story and paint the narrative rather than give them like, hey, this, I like screwed up. I messed up. I'm not giving that to confessionals. I'm going to tell them, not a big deal. Downplay it and let them focus on all of the ways that I'm great. And Devins has that too. And I think maybe he learned it from David. Maybe he asked for some confessional tips out there. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
You know, I think it's very freeing to be able to be in the position that Rick Devins was in. And I only know this from when we played the RHAP sequester game, and it was like very clear for like several rounds. Okay, I'm going out. And so that you get to just like basically just tell off everybody that you want and say whatever you want. And it's very freeing and fun. And the other players were like, we're just very fixated on, we have to vote out Rick Devins. All right, do you feel like that the players maybe to a fault might have been too fixated on what Rick is doing and how do we get Rick out?
No. Well, you know what? I have a theory. I mean, you can always, if you hype someone up, you're creating their story. Mm-hmm. So if you're always chasing after a Rick Devins and you're saying he's this important guy you need to get rid of, let's say Gavin, maybe his game at Tribal Council, let's say it was, Rick's been eliminated already. Whatever. No big deal. Why would I care about somebody that's already been eliminated in the game? I'm trying to not get, if you can play that defense, I think you can counteract creating that, because I feel like they created that legend of Rick Devins, right? Like they put him on such a pedestal
they
that you kind of have to knock him out now.
Too much.
Devins also knows how to communicate so well. I mean, he should be the first one out. You know, you don't want someone who's that great at convincing people and who's that great at speaking at the end. Again, especially if you're someone like Gavin, who might not, I'm not going to talk negatively about Gavin anymore. Mm-hmm. I think that he's probably great. But, you know, just like, especially, you don't want Devins around. He's a threat no matter how you slice it. So I think it's fair. I do think they hyped it up. And then on top of that, you have the fact that he's like amazing TV. And so we're getting him being hyped up constantly. And he should have gone really early. He should have gone again really early. Mm-hmm. But Julie wasn't going to have any of that. That's inhumane. Come on.
Yeah. And he has so many great lines in the season. You know, he really plays off of Jeff really well. One of the ones that really cracked me up was like Jeff talks about how like four of the most fit players this season are out of the challenge. And then Rick drops out. He's like, make it five, Jeff. <He's> like, he says like some really, really funny lines all throughout the season. So I did appreciate Rick, even though, you know, he ends up like really, you know, chewing on the scenery throughout a lot of the season and getting so much of the screen time. Wardog also, I thought, was fun to watch throughout the season. I'd kind of forgotten about his arc, Matt, especially in the pre-merge, where there's the whole thing where like the one thing that brings Kelly Wentworth and David Wright together in the pre-merge is that Wardog is strategizing too much. He won't do anything around the camp. He's holding them back in the challenges. And that was really fun to see his arc through the season.
Yeah, it was fun to see War Dog's arc, but it's tough because you can't help but look at War Dog and see, like, I even hate to say Tony 2.0. I feel like he's like a Joe 2.0 maybe from Heroes, Healers, Hustlers. So, like,
Joe Mena,
of course. Yeah, not Joe Anglim. But yeah, it was cool to see War Dog just kind of showing. He was unfiltered. I don't think he knew he was as bad at challenges as he was, but it was entertaining to see it along the way. And it opened up the door for like a lot of other fun, you know, exciting people to, well, maybe not the most exciting people, but other people to win challenges. Yeah, Aurora comes to mind as one of them. And we kind of just saw, you know, War Dog toiling away, trying. He never gave up, which is what I appreciate about him most. So. Mm-hmm.
I absolutely loved War Dog. First of all, he actually got us to call him War Dog. Like it's just, that's just what we call him now. No, what even is this?
I don't even know his real name. Yeah.
I think it's Dan.
Dan. Yeah. I was going to say, is it David? Yeah.
You see, he looks like a Dan.
Then here's this amazing person with a Brooklyn Nets tattoo, New York Mets tattoo. What a hero. You got to love him. And he's always thinking about the game. When I was watching this, I called him the catalyst because he's the catalyst for a lot of things moving around. Even the things that don't end up happening. He's always thinking. I call him the catalyst. He's great. I think he's one of the inspirations for the Eric boot. There's that great montage where he's talking to Julie and Gavin.
Yeah.
And you don't realize who he's talking to.
Yeah, I don't think I noticed that the first time through, but I was watching that on the rewatch and they cut that in a really interesting, like, cinematic way where they cut, it's like one conversation and they cut to War Dog and then they cut back. He's talking to Julia and they cut back to War Dog and he's talking to Gavin and they cut back. And he's talking to Julia. And I'm like, wait, are Gavin and Julia both there? Or are these two different conversations that they've cut into one? This is like another like cool thing in the season.
And it, you know, again, he's so good that he got someone like Kelly to reconsider and rechange her strategy in the early part of the game too. So he's always making his presence felt throughout the whole season.
Yeah, Matt, the Kelly Wentworth boot when War Dog says, "I had 5 30-second conversations today," and then the way that they go back and then they show us those conversations, like that was really cool also.
Yeah, and I kind of feel like War Dog doesn't get all of the credit that. Like, I don't give War Dog the credit that he deserves. It's he's a flashy character, but he's actually pulling off some good moves. And I never really felt like his judgment was horrible in the game along the way. And that was a great example where he's planting the seeds really subtly. You know what, War Dog? Maybe I need to watch again to truly appreciate War Dog. But I honestly probably felt like a lot of the people on the island felt where I'm just like, God, like, who is this guy? What's his personality? Which distracts you from his ability to kind of blindside you and take you out, which was kind of fun with him.
Yeah. It's a wild season where like the merge is more top heavy, where a lot of like the bigger like movers and shakers in the game end up going out like at the first half of the pre-merge. You know, Eric was somebody who was, even though we did not, I gotta be honest, I turned on the season the other night and I'm watching it and I'm like, oh, that guy. Like, what is his name? I totally forgot that Eric was a person. I had to look it up. But I do remember from talking at the time, like Ron Clark saying, like, no, Eric should have won. Like, I think Eric was a big deal at Kama, that he goes out. Julia, the players that were there talked up, but like, you know, Julia was a big threat. And then David goes, and then Kelly goes, and then War Dog, it looks like that he's like controlling things. He goes, and then Ron Clark, it's like, okay, he's going to be the person who's running everything. And then he goes, and then you end up with like a really, you know, eclectic group at the end of the game, and nobody really has been, running the game at that point. It's like wide open. And I think that really opened the door where maybe in a different season, Chris Underwood, can't catch up to whoever is the chip leader at that point because he has so much ground to make up, where this was a season where it was, I don't want to say it was a weak field of players, but I think that nobody really was coming across as sort of like the dominant player at that point.
Yeah, and even as we had those different narratives building up, so like for me around that point after Ron's out, we're seeing more of Aurora stepping up. She's she's a challenge beast, and then she's gone. And it's like I remember actually like going from not really knowing who she was to being attached to then being really disappointed that she was out to kind of feeling lost a little bit with who to attach myself to, which then I attached myself to Victoria and then that didn't work out. And then Lauren and that didn't work out. So, I mean, I think it was interesting to get these big characters for what we had to work with in that part of the season. I keep adding qualifiers because a lot of other seasons have huge characters, but like the fact that we kind of had some of these glimpses of people, I think that they were maybe just trying to tease us so we didn't get too attached to anyone before Chris came back. You know, if you look beyond Rick Devins, of course.
All right. A lot of the players talked about how Victoria played this really great game that was somewhat subtle, that we didn't always see it a ton on the TV show. Do you think that they didn't know how to edit Victoria?
I disagree. She's basically our narrator. We get a lot of Victoria perspective throughout the whole season. From episode one, we get to hear Victoria's perspective. We get to hear from her during her Aubrey voot, during the Aubrey voot, which was her first time at Tribal Council. So we consistently get Victoria throughout it. Maybe we don't get a lot of camp life with Victoria, but we definitely get a lot of confessional telling her where we are at Tribal, where we are in the story, and this is what I want to do. It always feels like Victoria always had something like a thorn by her side, and it was always her mission to get rid of whatever that thorn was, and she was successful up until she wasn't. So she was always there. She made her presence felt.
Yeah. Matt, do you have thoughts on Victoria in this rewatch?
Yeah. So the first time watching, I was really kind of drawn to Victoria for one reason or another. But like the thing that came up this time was just that I don't want to say she was just there. She was not just there, but she kind of blended a little bit into the crop of characters that were there for me, because like I remembered her. I think the first time around, like her personality was the thing that really stood out to me, and their comparisons. Like I immediately thought of Courtney Yates as someone who comes to mind. And I love that about Victoria. This time, you know, I already saw her personality, and I wish that there was even more like hardcore gameplay from Victoria. But part of me also wonders if like the fact that we didn't get that hardcore gameplay from her, and maybe, you know, from a few others, is like the way that Kama started, it wasn't as cutthroat. It was, everyone was just so happy to be there compared with Manu. And I feel like that is what we saw from a few different people who started at Kama. Just like there wasn't that, that killer instinct in them.
Yeah. So I would say that I feel like that she did have cutthroat gameplay, that I think that was actually like a big part of her character, is just how cutthroat she is. I do think that if anything, if there was a flaw in her game, there's a couple of times where she's like, this is a bad idea. I don't think that she is as assertive enough, like a lot like a Sophie in South Pacific, where Albert is like, all right, I got it. Like, here's the plan. And she's like, no, we're not doing that. That's a bad idea. A couple times, I think at the Eric vote, she's skeptical, right? That she's one of the that Gavin and Julia talk her into that. And I think she's sort of like, I wouldn't go this direction. Yeah. And then also it happens again. Then at the vote where Aurora goes home, right? That Ari, she wants to vote for Julie at that point. And then Lauren impresses on Gavin, hey, we have to make this move. And then Gavin says like, okay, well, let's, you know, Lauren already wants to do this, so let's go ahead and vote out Aurora at this move. And she really preferred to go for Julie. Right?
Yes. Well, yep.
Yeah, so I wonder if she ever plays again. I think she's actually like a really interesting player to come back and see, you know, as she is like maybe like more or less afraid to sort of like step up and sort of like put the brakes on a bad plan, and be able to sort of like direct things a little bit more. I think that would be like a really interesting thing to watch.
The biggest thing I saw was like the fact that she was she had these different instincts about what the right thing was, but I don't know if it was influence or even just like she didn't feel that strongly about them, but we didn't see her like successfully pushing through those different things where she had a hesitation, or where we saw a confessional where she's like, oh, I don't know if I want to go this way. Mm-hmm. And that's the part that's kind of frustrating, because I want her to like just go out and just kill everything and kill everyone. And well, maybe not literally, but in the context of the game and its rules, to go out there and kind of strike, because she was an exciting character. We didn't get a lot of that this season to that degree.
Okay.
So she is cutthroat. I think what she avoided was, if her name wasn't being thrown out there, then
mm-hmm.
She didn't mind.
She had a little bit of the Sandra, and she literally says, like, as long as it's not me, I don't care. I'm not going to go to rocks here for anybody.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Let's go through my list of the good and the bad. And if there's anything that I forget, let's be sure to talk about it. Let's start with the good here. Okay. We're talking about a lot of the big stories so far. Let me say, I'd like to comment on the decor. And this is a great tribal council that they have a theme this season. There's sort of like a shipwrecked motif. It is new. I guess they do it a little bit like in Cook Islands and stuff like that. But at least look, Matt, they have a direction and they're doing it. And there's a ship at tribal council.
They were committed. They were very committed to this theme. And I think this is actually, I mean, maybe I think we could probably argue that Jeff has still been leaning into the themes of the season. But this was one where I think they were really wanting to convey the desperation of the edge of extinction. And, you know, I think Tribal Council was the motif was part of that, Rob. So I'm with you with that being one of the good points.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Cool snuffer.
Cool snuffer as well. Yeah. So they look, when Survivor, I think, has a concept, I think that the art department can run with it. I think sometimes they just like, I don't know what, shells and stuff. I don't know what the theme is. So this was at least they had some direction. I mentioned the scene with Aubrey where she is, everybody's comparing notes on Aubrey. It's also a great moment when, Victoria is talking about Joe, and he's right behind her. That's a really fun moment in the season. Also when, Julia goes through goes through Joe's bag, where Ron tells us that he's, taking Joe to go for a, talk. And then Julia goes through the bag. And we get that sort of like Ron tells us like, well, actually what I was doing was that I sent, I took Joe down to the water so Julia could go through his bag. That was really fun. And, I'd like going to three tribes here. I think a lot of times that we could lose momentum in a season when we go to three tribes and lose what's going on. But I think that it sort of helped that we didn't. It was almost like that we kept the two tribes and then we just like had like a little bit of a mishmash third tribe. And it wasn't even really that mishmash. It was like they broke Kama in half and then Manu had a third new tribe. So. All right, I felt like that we didn't lose a lot in terms of where the story was going when they went to three tribes like they can in a lot of seasons.
The Lesu just were the same Manu people. And then Wendy, ultimately, mm-hmm. her fate was just the poor sacrifice at that joint tribal council.
Yeah. Matt, mm-hmm. what do you think of this? Of like, I'm always trying to think, like, because I feel like they do these mishmashes and like then somebody gets swap screwed. It's really it ends up being not fair a lot of times. What if in a season where we have two tribes, what if there's just like a draft for the third tribe? Okay, like pick like okay, you pick two or three people from their tribe. Like you pick two or three people from their tribe. That's the new third tribe. Like keep the two tribes basically, don't swap anybody, and then make a new tribe.
That could work. Rob, do you ding yourself for that? Do you get a ding?
Yeah, I think it's fun because I think in a lot of times that I like to see the story build through the pre-merge. And I just feel like a lot of times when we do that swap to three tribes, like we could lose a lot of momentum in the season.
Yeah. And I mean, this season was interesting. I still don't really know where to fall on the switch or the swap before the merge, because we didn't really get a lot of there. And I don't know if I should be impressed that it was so statistically improbable that basically, essentially, no one would swap or people would be together, with the exception of Wendy staying with the chicken. So she stayed with her number one alliance, as someone commented. Yes. But like, I'm still trying to wrap my head around that, because one, it's so improbable, but also
that's what Wardog said.
How would the season be different if there actually was some mixing up happening there? And maybe a draft would be better, but I would just like maybe they pull out everything again. Like, oh, I think that our buffs are broken. Let's see if they're
right. You wanted to do over.
Messed up. Why not? Like, if I'm Jeff, do it over. Something's wrong.
Yeah. So Rick Devens ends up going home, and then we have the really great tribal council. We have the 2-hour episode where it's really interesting, both halves, where Aubrey goes home in the first hour, and then we have the joint tribal council here where both of the tribes go, and Big Wendy ends up going out. Of course, everybody remembers in Game Changers when Malcolm went out when they did this. Ari, how did this work for you, two tribes at one tribal council?
I think the strategy was really interesting, right?
Yeah, so it was really interesting.
It was... Nobody from Lesu wants to go home, even though you don't go to Rocks for Wardog. And they're both employing the same thing, and they're just hoping that one of them cracks. But I feel like ultimately, once they figured out that Wendy was an option and let's just boot her, I think it just became really easy for the Revo. I don't think there was much mystery past that. But it was very interesting seeing two sides. It's like watching generals coming together, like, How are we going to approach this?
Yeah.
And Wendy was just the sacrifice for both teams.
Right. And Matt, I thought it was also interesting where it was right before the merge, where in the Malcolm vote in Game Changers, it happens I think there's still a couple more votes before they merge in that season, but it's like they're merging tomorrow. Like it was interesting to see the cross tribal, how much do you really want to get into a fight with these people where you're going to, having to potentially work with them at the next vote.
Yeah. And I mean, the biggest thing though, that the biggest reason I liked that vote a lot was actually just seeing this idea of dig your heels in and, figure out something, but you have to dig your heels in if you want to survive, or you could flip, but then it's going to go the other way and you're going to be at the bottom of the other tribes or the other alliance. So I think it was fun to see. I think Wendy was kind of screwed either way.
Yeah.
I think when you she needs to just let, I was going to say she needed to just let the chickens go, but that's exactly what she didn't need to do. She needed to let the chickens stay.
And then she had the whole thing about, I'm a vegetarian now. And then she gets voted out. She's like, I'm getting a cheeseburger.
Yeah. I think she's probably eating a cheeseburger right now.
Yeah. Well, she went to the edge of extinction for one night, but you knew why she raised the flag then after that. All right. Back to the good list. Ari, Gavin's shirt. Still fun.
Pineapple boy. Love it. My brother got that
pineapple shirt, right?
It's iconic.
Yeah.
It's a fashionista. Yeah.
Matt, do you think that Gavin needed a more serious shirt? Was it hard to take him seriously at the final tribal council with the pineapple shirt?
That's a great point. I was going to go the other direction, where I think he needs a more flashy shirt just to stand out even more with among everyone. But you know what? Maybe a suit shirt. One of those
like Tyson t-shirts. Wore to the Blood versus Water finale.
Exactly. That's what Tyson needs to send Gavin his shirt if and when Gavin's going to play again. Mm-hmm.
And then when we get to the merge in this season, all right, every vote is as interesting at the merge. There is not one snoozer at the merge.
Not one, but I think the biggest thing that stands out
David
for me
Wright's
is...
Boot. David Wright's boot is a snoozer, but it's in the first half hour of a double episode.
Yeah, it's like 12 minutes in. All right, we move on from there.
Yeah, yada, David Wright.
I think what's interesting is, and I think it's Eric that brings it up. He says... It's very interesting that I'm getting voted out immediately after I voted someone else out. And that continues to happen throughout the whole merge until the Ron boot. Mm-hmm. So there's that consistent story of whoever you plotted against, you're joining them right afterwards, buddy. And you got to talk with them now.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was definitely a part of the narrative of the season. It's talking about like resume and like who's making big moves and shields. And then, yeah, that was a consistent theme all through the game of somebody sort of like owned a big move. It's like, all right, get rid of that person now.
Yeah.
Now they're the person to beat.
And part of me wonders, like, I think it's a really convenient story to tell, but what if Survivor just gave us a different story? Like, showed us all the people who we heard about being really strategic, but we didn't really get to see being as strategic as they were. Cause there were a lot of these like ghost, strategic threats along the way. And so I think it was nice to see, but it would be cool to have more time just with everyone, mm-hmm. to see why they're actually threats and why they should be taken out along the way.
Like, who in particular? Yeah.
Well, so like so there are a few people who come to mind. Like, one is, number one person who always comes to mind for me now is Julia Carter, because she's literally like, we got nothing mm-hmm. around why she's a threat at all. Maybe she was one, maybe she wasn't.
She never goes to tribal council in the pre-merge. So I think that we never got to see her sort of like wheeling and dealing before a vote until we get to the merge.
Yeah, but I found that confusing, where it's like, what are we, is this mm-hmm. canon that someone's a threat? If we're not seeing it, I guess it is, but it's
Joe told her she was a threat.
Hey, I guess Joe knows what he's talking about, mm-hmm. apparently. Yeah, I guess some say.
Yeah.
She was good at puzzles.
Yeah. She we're told that she does have a lot of control, but it is one of those things where it does pop up out of nowhere, where I remember even in podcasts in the season where I think Julie was like, Julia's the biggest threat. I was like, wait, what? This is the first time we're hearing anything about the Julia running things.
And I think like this was an issue I had with the season, where there was all of the strategy. There were a lot of moves happening, a lot of moving pieces. And I feel like they could have used like another half hour each week, or something, just to give us more of that context, or maybe a cut. So I don't know, but it felt
like
they were
running
short on
time. Put the edge on CBS All Access or Paramount Plus.
Ding, ding.
Yeah. Or don't do it. Or just don't do it.
We need more scenes of Chris catching fish, some flag painting.
So I will also say that I think there were too many reward challenges in the season. I didn't get to the bad list yet, but I felt like between the edge, then sometimes like we had the edge, and then we had a reward challenge, we had an immunity challenge. We had like, 8 minutes of camp life. Three tribes.
That's one thing that came to mind for me as the season was going along and watching it. Like, I don't know if we needed to see. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that. And I know other seasons, they will cut out reward challenges, but maybe they were consequential enough in some way.
So they actually did cut out an impactful reward challenge in this season. I think that what really sets up the Kelly Wentworth vote, and I think that that was also mentioned in Lauren's interview that she did with EW, where people that came together, I think that the people that voted with Kelly Wentworth that night were the people that Kelly Wentworth took on a reward. And that was when they were able to get the votes against her. I could be misremembering that a little bit, but there was a reward challenge cut out of that episode. That being said, that I feel like if we have the Edge of Extinction, we don't need also to do a pre-merge reward challenge. I know we got the chickens for Wendy because of that, but I feel like that, we could spend more time with the tribes. The reward challenge isn't buying us too much.
We need the chickens.
We need the chickens, but they could be part of the immunity challenge, okay? You win immunity and you get chickens, and that's it. All right. Speaking of the challenges, there's a point where it is, I think that's the Eric vote, right? It's Aurora, it's Lauren, and it's Victoria. And they're standing up on this perch. Lauren passes out on the ground. She medical, get in here. Aurora starts negotiating with Victoria for individual immunity. And Julie's like, no, stop it. She's like, no, ground. I need to negotiate right now. Ari, this was great.
Julie comes across. What a heartfelt moment for her. She doesn't have the heart to get rid of Rick. She's telling Aurora to stop it right now. Aurora, what a badass. She continues to go. And then I think this really sets up Lauren as a badass, right? Like, she passes out. And the first thing we hear from her is, What happened? You passed out. Damn it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's embarrassed.
Yeah. That was a fun moment. I like that, man.
It was good.
Yeah, it was a great moment, and I think that I was trying. I still don't know whether to give Aurora the benefit of the doubt. I know she was really focused in, and she definitely heard Lauren hitting the ground. But the fact that like we just had Aurora like nonchalantly going on, she's a very direct, straightforward person, mm-hmm. and just gonna go for it. And that's one of the fun things about Aurora. I would have loved to see more of that from her. Like those more of a sense of like Aurora can't pick up on social cues would have been a fun little storyline. I don't know if that's her, but if Aurora is ever back on the show, let's get more of that.
Just I think that it was somehow. A peripheral vision thing also where exactly. she's like, couldn't see necessarily what was going on, but she's right. medical running over there, I think.
She could hear Julie screaming. Stop it.
Yeah. Ron Clark gives great facial reactions, especially Ari. Once we get to the merge, Ron at Tribal Council has such great reactions to every single thing that's said or done at Tribal.
There, well, I mean, doing facial reaction impressions right now on a podcast. If you're watching right now, he does the frown. A lot of, I am unsure of what I am going to say and what is happening right now, but I will acknowledge your statement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ron Clark was, I thought, really a fun character to have, Matt.
Yeah, and I didn't even realize along the way that apparently he's a villain. I mean, I loved every moment of it because he's just real and he's... I love Kama too. But yeah, it was good to see him. And he's actually on my list of, short list of people I'd love to see come back.
Yeah. He played hard. That was really fun to see. Especially when he's trying to play, give Rick Devins the, fake advantage menu. That's all really good. Another fun edit thing, they tell us when Rick Devins has a half immunity idol on the screen. That made me chuckle to see that. The live tribal was very exciting. Although, Matt, I kind of felt like that it probably live tribal, like they it was two segments. I felt like one segment was exciting. Second segment was like a little bit like, okay, we get it.
Yeah, and that was actually nice on rewatch. Like, okay, I'm just gonna take mm-hmm. this in as one bit. But yeah, it look, that's on my, I don't have a ranking list of tribals, but that's up there just
it's
from
a great
like
tribal.
A volatility standpoint. And I'll also say, I think one thing that makes it a lot better is the jury just reacting and going over the top.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, calm down a little bit, but like that definitely amped things up and took it to the next level.
Ari, I will say that I feel like that this tribal council is a turning point, and I think it's a bad one. I think that this was exciting, but I feel like that this really, you know, and I don't think the Survivor 39 players, I'm not sure if, I don't think that they had seen this, but the Survivor 40 players definitely did. And I think that this is now ushered in an era of everybody getting up out of their chairs, everybody whispering in each other's ears. Like this is sort of like the culmination of the JT Malcolm exchange at the in-game changers, and now sort of like, okay, we've jumped the shark now after this.
We're either going to see this every single time or we'll see it like once every new mm-hmm. season. This is a new normal, probably, when someone's... But then again, what really inspired it was some bad gameplay on Aurora's part. So, mm-hmm. you know, it really depends on the situation, but I think we're going to be seeing a little bit more of this.
Yeah. This really was a wild tribal council, Matt, where that David Wright is tells a story about how he saw a bunch of minnows get eaten by a shark. And then Jeff Probst is like, did that really happen to you? He's like, yeah, happened when I was taking a poop.
Is that Survivor's way of telling us that they don't think that actually happened to him? Or maybe that definitely didn't happen to him?
I don't know.
There were no sharks, no minnows.
But I'll tell you what. Like, I know if you got to go, you got to go. I see a shark. Yeah. Like, I'm out of there.
Yeah, why?
I'm going to find a new spot.
Why was he watching the shark and the minnows and taking it all in so beautifully and artistically, you know, mm-hmm. while pooping? Like, don't do that. Like, focus. Focus, yeah,
for
please,
David Wright.
David. Yeah.
And he needs to do that. And how did he see that? He was probably squinting.
Yes. Yeah. And then Jeff is asking, like, okay, well, who's the minnows and who's the sharks? And Rick Devin says, well, I think I'm the poop. So it's a wild tribal council. Yeah. They really set up Rick Devin's there. The Kelly Wentworth blindside is a really, really great vote. One of the many in the post-merge. Also, it was a great Survivor Know-It-Alls live from Philadelphia that night as well, mm-hmm. with David and Kelly both going out of the game. People are like, oh, you knew. You knew. That's why you had the Know-It-Alls that day.
That's right.
Not really.
That's exactly it.
It's not how it works. No. It's not how it works.
Nope.
Yeah. And then the War Dog blindside was great. And then the Ron Clark blindside was also great, where that there's so much going on at that vote, Ari, where there are four votes on Rick Devin's and he plays his idol. But we get, is it Victoria, Lauren, and Gavin are the three who then say, okay, well, we think that Rick might have an idol, so let's go ahead and put three votes on Ron to knock him out. There was a lot of like sort of like next level thinking in this season of, okay, after this person plays the idol, not a vote split, but it's like, okay, that after this person plays the idol, who do we really want to go home? And it might be different than what other people in the vote think we're doing.
And didn't Gavin use an extra vote?
He used Aurora's extra vote. Aurora had the extra vote.
Aurora's is giving extra votes to everyone. To Ron. Yeah. Ron gets to hold it for a second.
She gave it to Ron. Ron probably should not have given it back to her because it ultimately gets used to knock Ron out. Yeah. Sorry. So it's Gavin has two votes. And then also I think Lauren is the other vote for Ron. And then that gives Victoria, I think she knew about it, but she's like, oh, I didn't vote for Ron.
And you know what? I just remembered the reason why Aurora even gives Gavin the extra vote is she said, if it's a tie, then I'm not going to be able to vote. So you're right. Some extra next level thinking.
Yeah. That's really good. And Matt, we hear so much about Rick Devin's found all the idols. In fairness, Rick Devin's doesn't find an idol until episode 11, which is the 12th hour of the show. He gets one when he comes back from the edge of extinction. But in terms of Rick Devin's finds a lot of idols at the end of the season, but he's not finding idols the whole show.
Yeah, but it's kind of like what Ari was saying, like that moment playing the idol, I think even outshines how you get the idol, in part because there are a handful of people undoubtedly who don't know exactly how you got the idol. But even if they do, you played it and you played it correctly and it paid off. So I think that, you know, with Devin's, I'll let it slide mm-hmm. for him. I don't think it matters how he gets the idols or whether they're real or fake. Like the fact is he makes the most out of whatever mm-hmm. idols he has. So yeah.
you get some advantages as well along the way from David Wright. And also the finale, love it or hate it, it was a banger, Ari.
From the beginning, all the way from the beginning, where we start off with all of our warriors all lined up.
Yes.
And then everyone that's watching has at least one person they're rooting for. Everyone's hopeful. Mm-hmm. I'm rooting for Reen. Everyone's rooting for somebody, right? And then
Dude,
I think it starts
Ari,
off.
You're the best.
Big Reen fan. Mm-hmm. Reen Daily, you're a hero.
Who isn't?
So it starts off, and I think at first, the main competitors are Chris, Joe, Aurora. Those are probably the main three that are probably coming back.
Yeah. It's very exciting.
Yeah.
I will say, though, Matt, that and I was there live that night, and it was super exciting. I didn't see myself on the when I watched it back. But that being said, when they go to like, all right, here are the pre-merge. Like, look at these people. It's like Wendy and Keith. And then look at the people from the edge. Chris Underwood, way overdressed. They did a terrible job producing that finale. Chris Underwood should have been dressed like a schlep. And then he could have put the suit on backstage.
See, that's it. He couldn't take the smile off his face. And I watched that part of the finale multiple times because he's just grinning and everyone else is just like looking around like, oh yeah, we're not going to get mm-hmm. back in the game. Come on. And oh my God, Chris, like if you knew because of that, I don't blame you because it seemed like a dead giveaway.
I said, oh, mental note. Chris excited. Underwood is very overdressed for the third boot of the season.
He was on TV though. Like, who could blame him? I would have done the same thing, right?
Nobody else had a suit. No, that was there. I think that maybe a couple of people might have had a jacket, but he had a suit.
What kind of shirt did Gavin have on? Like a Hawaiian shirt or something? He had some
Tommy Bahama.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah. it wasn't at Christmas.
Like David Wright was just like wearing like a polo shirt. I was like, oh, he's not getting back in. But
maybe he could have had like some kind of like just rip off again like a tux shirt. You could go with the Tyson and pull that off, rip it off. Actually have a suit under somehow.
But he didn't need to be on stage for 2 hours. Like they could have just he could have just been in a t-shirt.
Look, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I think that they didn't think that through too
they
much.
Didn't think
Rob,
it through.
But
yeah.
I appreciated it at least. Okay. It's good on the rewatch.
Let's talk about the bad. From the Edge of Extinction.
Uh-oh.
Okay. All right. How do we feel about the Edge of Extinction sign? Do we like that every episode of like, oh, let me see. If I go this way, I'm out of the game. This way.
Yeah.
My question is that at a certain point, did they stop showing them reading the sign and they just showed them like walking to it?
Yeah. And we had a whole cliffhanger of, oh, is Keith going to pick to go to the Edge of Extinction or just go home?
I mean, to be fair, he did go home, but also it could have that if anyone was going to possibly go home, I think we saw him and Wendy go home. So I think that was fair. And that was before we really saw the narrative of everyone going to the Edge. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I don't think we really needed it, but it became this necessary part of the Edge and we had to see it come back again later on because it's just like they need to make that decision.
Yeah.
At least in season 40, we saw the fire tokens and that added another wrinkle to it.
Yeah. I've been complimentary of the cast so far tonight, but I do feel like that from Survivor's perspective, this is one of the least diverse casts that they do, I think, in the 30s. I haven't done the comparison. Certainly nowhere near the 50% that they are pledging to get to of Black, Indigenous people of color for future seasons here in, is it a cast of 18? Keith and Julia are the only two Black players in the entire cast. We bring back, four returnees, all white people. Feels like that, for a season that was, what was this? Is this 2019?
2019.
Yeah.
Early 2019.
Early 2019. Yeah. Feels like Survivor could have done better here.
Yeah, they could have done. And that was one of the things, one of my problems with this season where we show up. And again, I don't even know. I was just so engrossed kind of with like this idea of the returning players. And there was stimulus overload between the Edge of Extinction and everything else that I didn't even really fully take in the lack of diversity of the cast. And then you have Keith gets voted out. Wendy's voted out. Julia, we don't see her, but then she's voted out. And it was really hard to watch. Just the lack of diversity, but also how painful it was to see. In the case of Julia, we could kind of, based on her story, see how the lack of diversity definitely affected her experience. But man, like it was painful. Like as a black person watching the game, that was tough. And then even from the perspective of as an LGBT person, we had a couple of LGBT characters. We didn't really get that framing for them much along the way. But yeah, they didn't really lean into the personalities and identities of people. And they definitely figured out that those were a huge part of people's stories by season 39 when we had a whole different ball game with that. But yeah, it was tough, Rob. It was really tough.
And I do think that Julia and, her well chronicled issues with this, during the season and, the way that she talked about them after the season, I do think that you do see a big leap to how they cast Survivor 39. And then ultimately we'll see maybe another leap to how the season of cast of season 41 is going to come together. So, this cast individually as people, pretty good, but feels like that we could have done a little bit better here. Let's go back to more bad. All right. I talked a little bit at the beginning. The theme of personal growth, I feel like it does get heavy-handed, Ari. I'm sorry.
There's a lot of crying.
Mm-hmm.
You're not a fan of crying?
Dude.
Every episode. If you weren't crying every episode, then mm-hmm. why this isn't for you.
Yeah. It was not great. That this theme also then culminates in letters from yourself. How about some letters from yourself?
I have to say,
I
feel like everyone had appropriate reactions to it. It wasn't like, oh my gosh, I didn't expect this. I'm bawling, because we got to see everyone have their reflective moment. I liked it. I liked it for what it was, because it helped us get to know the players that much more. I did think it's strange. I don't know. It's strange to look back at something you wrote at the start of the game and you're then in the middle of the game. So it's all kind of meta, but I liked it for just getting to know people a little bit more than we knew them before.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I was cracking up that Wardog wrote to himself and referred to himself in the written letter as Wardog. That was my favorite part.
Yeah.
It's his brand.
Dear Wardog. Yeah. We get the letters from home, and then we do go like around the circle at the end of the Edge of Extinction of like, all right, everybody, tell us what you learned on the Edge of Extinction. I talked about that the final five vote is just is so crazy, and that's about it. I didn't have a ton of bad things from this season, Ari.
Because there's not much. It's a good season. It's a shame it's rated this low. I had it as number two.
Number two season of all time.
Whoa.
This is how I rank seasons. You ready? You ready?
Yeah.
I ask, would I rather watch this or that?
Mm-hmm.
And Edge of Extinction, every time, if I need to rewatch something, it always beat out everything else except for Heroes and Villains.
Wow.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Matt, I do feel like that, we know what's happening. Like, we know the twist. We know Chris is going to win. That being said, I felt like that now that you've sort of like taken the worst two things off the table, like I'm not going to like get mad again that Chris won. That already happened. So that being said, like, I think when you take that away, like, I do think that this ages better.
It does make it a lot better. And I will also say, I think something that helps on the rewatch is just knowing more of the characters. So listening to different interviews or following them on social media. But without that, it's still disappointing, because I really don't feel like I got to know people enough on the season and got to dig into their stories. We got a little bit of that mm-hmm. with, either the letters that they sent to themselves or their final words as they left the Edge. But I want more, because there's a lot to dig into with each of these characters. And mm-hmm. I think they all deserve better.
Let's bring in some questions from the listeners. Let me start with one of my own. If there was no Edge of Extinction, Rick Devens is gone, Chris Underwood is gone, and I guess we get to a final four now of it is Julie, Gavin, Lauren, and Victoria. All right, is Victoria the winner?
I think we're looking at a Victoria win. I feel like the jury was rooting for Victoria towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do we believe Chris's information that Victoria was in the lead?
I do. I do believe that. Because I remember from talking to people like talking to Rick and people like that at the end of the season, I did a lot of exit interviews like because we hadn't done them because that we didn't get to talk to the cast the whole way through. I think I did like 7 or 8 interviews with people after the season. I do believe that, Rick felt like that, that him and Victoria were the favorites on the jury.
Hmm. I think that's what we're looking at.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. And also Victoria would be able to like give them something at the final tribal that I think they would appreciate, just okay. Articulating herself.
Matt, does Victoria get past final four fire making? So I don't know how she was at making the fire. I know Lauren says at one point that she's like, oh, my dad would be really proud of me of how I'm making the fire. I don't know necessarily like who wins that final four immunity, which Chris ultimately wins in the real version of the season. So I don't know who we give that final four immunity to and who ends up going into the final four fire making.
Yeah, I don't know. As Victoria is a waitress from New York, so I don't think she's going to win Fire Making, but what do I know? I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, so interesting to see how that would go. Let's go to some of more of our listener questions. Okay. Dan Sinensky says, Chris Underwood was a passenger who hijacked the plane during the last 5 days. Put in the form of the question, Chris Underwood was a passenger who hijacked the plane during the last 5 days, wasn't he?
No, because The Edge of Extinction was part of the game. He was in it. He was playing it. He was clearly doing a lot on the edge. Now, it wasn't the traditional game. And again, it's a lot easier to appreciate once not only you've seen the season, but also we've seen The Edge back. So I think we've had that added legitimacy. But no, he was doing a lot on The Edge. I think one thing that came up, I think it was Aubrey mentioning it, possibly during the final tribal, just the fact that like there was a lot of social game happening, and she asked Chris about it, and he was talking about his social game. He was doing a lot. The game and the rules were different than what we normally get. I didn't love it the first time around, but them's the breaks, Rob.
Okay. Casey H wants to know, if Chris was to play in Winners at War, how do you think he would have done? This is under the assumption the other winners had seen him play. So, okay, to look at this in like the fourth dimensional version of this. So, Survivor Edge of Extinction finale happens, I think, like a day before the winners left for Survivor Winners at War. So, hypothetically, we're going to give him somebody's. Let's give him Nick Wilson's spot. So Survivor says, okay, all right, Nick Wilson. I mean, you could maybe give him Adam's spot, but we're looking to fill like a young guy's spot. I think that maybe, yeah. I'm not sure like which archetype he necessarily would take. All right, Chris Underwood goes out to Survivor Winners at War. How does it go, Ari?
This is how it goes. You ready? He gets voted out fourth. He's such a big he's such a big threat. He's so strong. He's helping everyone win the challenges. He does not get back in the first time for Edge of Extinction. Then he comes back in the final five. Sorry, Natalie Anderson. He pulls the same switcheroo moves and he wins Survivor Winner at War. Everyone hates it. Everyone's furious. And I would instead be singing its happy graces. Yep. That's how it would go. Exactly. To the T.
Tony's like, look who's this. Who is this guy? Chris Underwood. I've never seen this guy before in my life. He never plays out here. He goes on the Edge of Extinction. He gets a fire token. He comes in here and then he tries to win the game. And like, hey, Tony, this theme is not on trial. You are.
Do you think? Hey, do you
the
think they would have
on trial?
Oh yeah. God. Just like, yes, I wonder. I wonder if like in this alternate universe, if we're gonna actually see Chris be dragged to the end of the season because they don't want to put him on the edge because he's such a huge edge threat.
If you strike me down, I'll become more powerful than you could ever imagine.
That's what we're getting. That's what we're getting. I think he's going to be in like final five or so, and then they'll get rid of him. Maybe they'll bring him. Maybe they'll just bring him to the edge just as like the biggest flex ever. But he's not getting voted out, Rob.
I kind of feel like that he's going to be around for a little while because I feel like that the way that Survivor Winners at War worked, it was like a lot of the old school players were targeted, somewhat early on. I think that people, he seems like a likable enough guy. And I think that people were like, okay, well, I'll bring him to the end because he doesn't have a good story of, you know, that nobody's rooting for Chris Underwood to win again. He just won.
Yeah, it's not as impressive the second time around, is it? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it would have been interesting. I honestly do. Not that I'm the biggest like Chris Underwood fan in the whole world, but I like the fact that he was like a real X factor in terms of like everybody else played a traditional game. Chris was, he won on the flukiest of fluke wins. Like what would happen? What would happen if he played in that season?
Especially based on the people that were there, right?
Yeah. I mean, and there was the edge. Yeah. Like, I think it would have been I'm not saying like pounding the table of like bring back Chris Underwood by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think that it would have been interesting to see how he would have played out. I'm not sure how he did in Survivor Winners Apiece.
Yeah, don't remember, but we'll go back. He did pretty well for himself, not as well, but you could only go down from the big win there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Let's see. Nancy Hare wants to know, can you do some comparison between The Edge of Extinction in 38 and on Winners at War? I think it worked much better on Winners at War. We got really cranky, boring people in season 38, where on Winners at War, we saw them as another tribe, and in some cases, they were more of the story. In season 38, we didn't even really get a story for the eventual winners, so that hurts the season overall. Okay, Ari, could you compare The Edge of Extinction for season 38 with The Edge of Extinction for season 40?
I think they're very different. One of them had, you know, instead of the tasks of getting rice or looking for whatever challenge advantages, there was a lot of fire token stuff going on over there. Mm-hmm. So there was definitely more of an incentive for the people out there. And also we skipped a lot of the boring stuff, right? We didn't have to show people fishing. We got to show people duking it out, looking for logs.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's just a different dynamic.
Matt, which did you prefer?
I prefer... So from a viewing perspective, I definitely prefer the Survivor 40 version of it, where I feel like we got so much more programming. Like, but Edge of Extinction was cool because it was just nothing. There was nothing going on there. It kind of felt like, you know, a dorm in college and the RA is gone. So no one really knows what to do other than like drink and party or whatever is going on. You know, I think that I liked watching 40, but I liked the purity of 38.
Yeah. I mean, there were moments on the Edge of Extinction in season 40. I liked the fighting that happened in the, you know, pre-merge of this season. But I feel like that once we get to the post-merge, there's nothing that's super interesting that's happening on the Edge of Extinction. It's not like the stuff on season 40 was that great either. I don't want to overhype the season 40 Edge of Extinction stuff.
No, but it was pretty nice on the, like, they got their whole families out there. Like, what is that really so bad? A tropical vacation with your family and Jeff Probst on Survivor. Like, that was pretty nice. That didn't feel like, as much as Jeff hyped it up in 38, I have to go back and rewatch 40, but I feel like he probably laid off a little bit on like how rough the edge is. Cause it wasn't what it was when Reem got there.
Yeah. Reem was mad. I did a podcast with her back in like February of last year. And she was like, dude, they got a sheet. They've got a little mattress on that bed. She was pissed.
Peanut butter. They had everything.
Oh yeah. I forgot about that. You could eat with the fire tokens. Yeah.
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 Screw you, dude.
Not happy about any of that. Okay.
Fair enough.
This was a theory. I saw Chrissy Hofbeck had floated this during the season. Ben L says, do you think the Edge was only in this season to test it out for Winners at War? Matt, was this the test run for Winners at War?
Chrissy Hofbeck, actuary, epic author. Yes. She was completely right about that. And I remember seeing it at the time and it makes sense. They needed to test it out. And I think they kind of, I, in a way, in retrospect, it kind of seems like they phoned it in a little bit on this season where it's like, let's test out the Edge of Extinction. Let's throw in whoever we can. Let's pull in this kind of mishmash of a cast. Whereas like at 40, I think it was definitely polished. So they were test running it. Go Chrissy.
Yeah.
You're right. That's what you do. You're an actuary.
Yeah. All right. Do you feel like that they walked away from this experiment? If this was the test run, they're like, oh, okay, this is killing it. Okay. Let's get some fire tokens in here and we are good.
In terms of keeping it going for a future season?
Yeah, like they didn't walk away from the Edge of Extinction and be like, never again. Can't believe that this. We had our winner come. They were like, oh yeah, bring it back. Like, not right away. Let it simmer for a minute. And now it's coming back, baby.
It's coming back. Jeff Probst loves the second chances. He gets so much out of it. He loves it. I think we're not going to see it all the time, but we're definitely going to see it again. There's going to be more fire token stuff, and it's just going to be a little bit easier for the people that do it the other times.
Mm-hmm.
Fans versus favorites 3. We'll see it again.
I feel like the Edge of Extinction was a success for Jeff, though. Like, if we're sitting at the dinner table with Jeff Probst, he's going on and on with his like glass of wine or whatever it might be. He's drinking, spilling it everywhere, just talking about how amazing it was that Chris Underwood actually went on to win the season. And I would imagine they were really proud of that. And I kind of wonder, you know, it didn't pay off the second time around. But I think that's kind of the beauty of the first time around, where we saw what was possible. Maybe they'll try it again. And then we're like, oh, are we going to get a winner from the edge? Or are we going to get someone who wasn't on the edge? Who knows? Jeff, I really feel like loves it, though. I feel like I heard something about him saying, oh, we'll come back to the edge in a little bit. We're not doing it again anytime soon.
Yeah, he had said that in the interview that I had done with him, that they were not going to bring it back in anytime soon. But I do think that Jeff loves seeing a person like overcome all of the odds. Again, don't forget the theme of the season, which comes from Jeff, says, when Survivor pushes you further than you can imagine, that who can stand up, adapt, and conquer. And I feel like that they love that story from Chris.
I love that story from Chris. It was awesome. So good.
Yeah. Stand up, nailed adapt, it. And conquer. Doesn't have the same ring as Outwit, Outplay, Outlast, but stand up, adapt, and conquer. Okay.
I think we'll be seeing it again, but I feel like his feelings were hurt from all the people saying they didn't like
it. Yeah.
Tom Palmer asks, crazy take, Chris Underwood coming out of nowhere and stealing the win from Devins was hilarious and a much better ending than the predictable Devins idling his way to a win. Agree or disagree? Matt, what do you think?
Well, I mean, thinking about it as stealing the win from Devins, they were both voted out. Like, I think there's an argument that neither of them might have deserved the win, but I liked seeing Devins get taken out, because it was just such a foregone conclusion. And in the final tribal, we actually had like some questions. Like, according to the jury, they weren't sure who they were voting for. So, I mean, what more could we ask for at the end? It wouldn't have been as exciting of a finale if not for that.
Ari, it was hilarious to troll the people who were on Twitter at the time, saying like Rick Devins, obvious win. I like winners who don't get voted out. And then to have Rick Devins thwarted, which seemingly that the anti-Rick Devins people would have given anything, only to have Chris Underwood come out of nowhere.
I just wonder, what did people enjoy more? Did they enjoy seeing Chris take down Rick because it was so obvious? You know what I'm saying? Like, for me, that's what I enjoyed out of it. Just the randomness of it. On finale night, I didn't see the first hour. So when I showed up, I'm showing up to Lauren giving Chris just a random idol. And all I could think of is, I can't wait to go back and see, how did we get here? How did we get here? And the journey was great. It was fun to watch how they got there.
Okay. We have not talked much about Julie in our run through the season. And let's correct that. Okay. Katie says Julie is completely disregarded in the final tribal council. What kind of path does a player like Julie, an older, maybe emotional woman, have to take in order to be considered a serious contender at the final tribal council? Okay. Ari, in your many rewatches, have you picked up more from Julie?
She wins immunity twice. She's got guns.
Yeah.
Maybe if she won every single immunity at the end, other than that, I feel like they weren't buying her, I'm being emotional I'm being strategically emotional bit. I don't think they were buying that.
Yeah.
I don't think that pitch worked.
Matt, do you have thoughts about Julie's game?
Yeah, so in general, I thought, like, when I started watching the season, you're looking at Julie, and to me, Julie reminds me of like a sports fan who talks about the team. It's like we were out there, we fought so hard, but she actually like really earned her stripes along the way, and I felt bad for her at the end because she just like, she actually was playing games. She didn't know how to articulate it later on. And we did see those emotional moments take over. I think, you know, what you need to do, maybe it's a simple answer, but you just need to like make sure that you're throwing your strategy in people's faces along the way. To me, though, it didn't seem like she really thought through what her strategy was. I don't want to say she didn't have a strategy, but you could say that she didn't have a have yeah. great strategy.
It seemed like that there were times when she's very involved in what's going on. The first vote at the merge, you know, she's very much involved in like, hey, we're not voting out Rick Devens. Like she's mm-hmm. She's very involved there. But then after the Eric vote happens, then that's the famous like she's going to jump ship. She's really, yeah. you know, seemingly very emotional about where she stands in the game. And then a couple times then she sort of like finds her footing. Seems like that she's a little bit in Ron's shadow at a couple of points, like in the middle of the game. But then again, she like kind of like emerges. She's like working with Rick, but she never really gets the footing that she had in the early part of the merch.
Yeah, and I don't know if she it like I just didn't get the sense that she wanted it, which was frustrating thinking back. It reminded me of like the early 20s seasons, especially where we're getting recruits where mm-hmm. like I'm pretty sure she wasn't a recruit. I don't know any, and maybe she was from all I know, but like she just didn't, I don't think she was trying to win the game, or maybe what it was, I don't know if she's even saw that she had a chance to win, so we weren't getting that along the way. But she was fun to watch, and as I thought through like who I would love to see again versus who I would recast, like I would keep Julie there. Oh. She adds a lot to the season.
Yeah. She had something going on with Lauren she has a good moment during the season, Ari, when we didn't talk about the reward where War Dog and Rick Devens go and they're putting mud on each other, which is funny. But like they're talking about how like, oh, like the goats, we got to vote them out. And they're talking about like, hey, we need to work together.
And I think the big argument was, who do we get rid of first? You know, and for mm-hmm. Julie, it always felt for me that she was always like, she would always say what she needed to do, but sometimes she wouldn't actually go through with it. Like very early on, she says, why are the boys looking for the idols? I should be looking for the idol. And instead, I am mm-hmm. talking about not looking for the idol. So it always felt like she always knew what she needed to do, but she didn't always actually follow through with it. Mm-hmm. And I think she wanted War Dog out and Lauren didn't. So I think, you know, again, she didn't make her voice a little bit louder.
Okay. Let's take a question from Katie, who says, both ended in the spring of 2019. What are the worst ending, The Edge of Extinction or Game of Thrones? Matt, what do you think?
Look, I'm going to go with the Game of Thrones. Definitely Game of Thrones.
Worst ending.
Because, yeah. Worst ending, because I think this was a phenomenal ending for the season, for the theme. Maybe it's not what we wanted, but I think we could get Survivor fans to come around on this ending because it did validate the theme. Jeff was happy. And isn't that what we all want at the end of the day, Rob?
Mm-hmm. Hey, sure. I mean, if we're happy too, that's good. That's good.
We'll take it.
Yeah.
Yeah. More colorful Edge of Extinction, more color yes. in it.
Yeah.
Very bright.
I think that Edge of Extinction had a more exciting finale.
Yeah, absolutely.
Edge of Extinction finale made more sense. Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I think that it was definitely head and shoulders above the Game of Thrones finale. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Michael M says, where does the pre-merge rank for you? I think that this is the best of the seasons ranked so far. The Island of the Idols has a pretty good pre-merge. I think that the merge is better of this season. Ari, which half of the season do you like better?
So the question is not how does it rank between the other seasons.
Well, let's first talk about what is the better part of the season, the merge or the pre-merge?
Oh, it's the post-merge. Absolutely. That's where everything actually comes together. That's mm-hmm. where we actually get some results.
Yeah.
You know what? I have an opinion. This season is the most bingeable. Once you get started at a certain point at the merge, they don't even do the previously on, just goes right into it. This is going to be the perfect, and I hate Netflix, but this is going to be the perfect show mm-hmm. to put on Netflix. Are you still watching? Yeah, I'm still watching. Yeah. It's still going. It flows, goes right into the other.
Yeah. I feel like that when we talked about the next seasons to bring to Netflix, Matt, this might be in the discussion.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I'll also say, I think that like looking at the like at pre-merge versus post-merge, I love the characters and the stories we were getting in there. I kind of didn't love seeing them picked up. But yeah, the post-merge was by far more exciting. The strategy was nonstop. I feel like they part of me thinks that they cut out the previously on because they just didn't have time for it this time around. Mm-hmm. So we got so much packed in there. It was almost too much, but yeah, I think it's I'm with you, Ari, on it being definitely a bingeable season.
Okay. We didn't even get the Jeff Probst phrase of the day after Tribal. I love those. We didn't get any of those this season.
No time.
The lesson of the day.
Yeah, because we had to go see the person walk to the sign. Yeah.
Have a decision to make.
Rudy Moser wants to ask us, are captain seasons DOA? Matt, will we ever see another season that has captains on it?
Yes.
We will.
We will. We will. I believe we will.
Okay.
Because I think that the Survivor loves to come back once in a while, like maybe in 10 seasons, if we get that far. So I feel like Survivor loves to come back to, we have this iconic player. And in this case, like, I mean, it was especially the men, like between David and Joe, were just these two players that Jeff is salivating over, and he has to fit in those people somehow. But I also think that Jeff would feel strange about putting, like, you know, putting a huge threat in with a bunch of newbies on a season. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll see it. I think that it needs to be the right person, but I definitely think that Jeff wants to give someone that spot or a couple people that spot again.
Ari, what do you think? We're going to do another captain season.
They're going to do, I mean, Survivor's going to go on forever at this point, right? Yeah. We're going to see it again. Yeah. It's a matter of one. Survivor, mm-hmm. You know, maybe we'll see Greg Bewis be a captain.
So I kind of feel like that they're not going to do another captain season, but I wonder after the success of Winners at War, if we might be open to more full all-star seasons, like, you know, every 2 years do a full all-stars.
I wonder about that. I think part of me, you're making me think about just the coaches aspect of it. Like, Rob, do you think we won't see coaches back? Because I'm sure that we're going to see some of those winners back in the season. I don't know to what extent, mm-hmm. but I would imagine that there'll be some way of putting them on a pedestal, yeah. Jeff Probst style.
I really don't think we'll see it again. I think that people didn't, like, especially the way that Joe and Aubrey, you just got boxed out from the start of this season. Like, a returning player, that if I got a call and was like, hey, we want you to come back and do a captain season, not that it, like, anybody in their right mind would ever suggest that as a theme with me as a captain, I think I'd feel like, I don't think I'm going to have a good shot here. I feel like I'm a sitting duck. Like, maybe it was easy, like when Rob and Russell and Coach and Ozzy were doing it, or even when they brought back the three people in the Philippines. But I kind of feel like that you're kind of a dead duck.
Yeah. I feel like they'll find a way somehow. They'll throw in some twists, Rob. Mm-hmm. They'll call you up and say, well, you'll be safe for the for until the merge. And then, mm-hmm. you know, so I think that they'll find a way to do it, just to find the excuse, sadly, to bring back, you know, again, some of the favorites.
Yeah.
Here's how they'll counter it. They'll say, Rob, how about you're in a tribe with people that have written you as their favorite Survivor player?
Oh,
it's okay. Like, oh, well.
Yes.
Well, now, well.
Think about yes. it.
Kelly and Lauren. Lauren, she had her favorite, Kelly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Big fan.
And
makes
Joe.
It a lot easier.
Yeah. Mimi has a question. True or false? If there was more Ream, would this season be ranked higher?
It's fine. You know what, dude? It's
Matthew,
fine.
You did not enough Ream.
I think we had the right amount of Ream because... if Ream came back, if she won that final challenge on the edge and was back in the game, I don't think the vast majority of Survivor fans would be happy that she won the game and came back. I think we had the right amount of Ream. I think she played her role perfectly. I would love to see more of her. And I think that's only because we had, like, the right balance of her, especially for her not being in the game. I just think that would be really frustrating for people to watch more of Ream first boot. I don't know if that's what the Survivor fans want.
Ari.
Perfect amount of ream.
Perfect amount of ream. Yeah, I agree. Yeah. I agree. I think it would have been fascinating to have Ream come back into the season and ultimately be the winner. I do feel like that you would, like when Josh and I did the Wiggle Room, we talked about like, okay, let's do power rankings. Who would be like a satisfying winner? And Ream was like two or three for us in terms of satisfying winner because you got her story the whole season. If you were trying to say like, did Ream have a winner's edit? It's like, yeah, like they, I mean, you saw so much Ream. I mean, she really has an arc throughout the whole season.
I was rooting for her so bad there that last episode. And you know what? It's the perfect amount of Ream because she says something at every tribal and it's always good. It's always funny. It's like, when Erica gets there, she goes, dude, don't get excited.
Yeah.
Then I think when War Dog goes in, she goes, I'm going to have something to say to you. Don't worry.
Mm-hmm. And then she's like, you can go sleep in the ocean.
Yeah. And then by the end of it, you got Aurora saying, oh, you must be Miss Positivity. Like, mm-hmm. It's great. We got just enough Ream.
Yeah.
She closes out every episode.
She was great. You missed her presence in Winners at War. Matt, if Ream does play again, well, what does Ream need to do to avoid being Francesca'd?
Oh, no, I don't think she needs to do anything. I think she just needs to show up.
Because she'll play again.
I think what we need from Ream is follow through. So if you're going to threaten to dropkick people, like at least, you know, start dropkicking. And, you know, if we just need more of that. But people, I think that by now, like on the second time that she's on, she's just likable. Like people could appreciate that. And I think you kind of realize like, she's right. Like, come on, dude, like go with it. Like support Ream. We want her to go far. We feel bad that she had to be on the edge for a whole month. And so I think she would do well.
Yeah. Are you?
I think she
just
did really
she
well.
Power lift before she came on here doesn't mean that she's not tough, dude.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
All right. Do you think that she could avoid a potential Francesca scenario where she ends up getting voted out first again?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Everybody loves Ream. Come on.
If I was on a season with Ream, I would say, over my dead body, are we going to vote Ream out first? Do not do that to her.
Yeah, I don't think we're seeing a Francesca scenario happen again. Yeah. I think Francesca should wear that proudly. I don't think she does, but she should.
Yeah, I think the Francesca thing, and we haven't gotten to Survivor Caramo in there. I think that was a very specific circumstance that they put her back on a tribe with Philip, where there was already like bad blood brewing, where that, you know, that they could not coexist in one tribe, no, under any circumstances. So if Ream plays again and people vote her out first, they're monsters.
Yeah, they're out. They're done with all of us. They're canceled.
We're done.
I'm out on them.
We're out on them. Okay. Let's see. Michael Meter says, "Did you know that David Wright's brand is loyalty?" We've talked very little about David Wright, Matt. How did David Wright hold up for you?
He was trying. He was trying really hard.
He did.
And I'm like, David, like the thing that's so fascinating about him is that he, you know, if you ask him a question, he'll have something really witty and poetic to say.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, he's kind of just walking around the beach as like this. He's definitely not bumbling. That's not the word. But he's just kind of this I was going to say frail creature. That is not nice to say, but he was kind of just like frailly moving. He's David Wright still physically, but mentally, I think he was like, there were some bright lights in his face and he was saying like, oh, I'm on Survivor. I need to, I'm going to impress Jeff. Jeff loves when I say that my brand is loyalty. He loves when I talk about the sharks and the minnows and like, I didn't need it. I don't know anyone who did need it on 38.
Yes, and I know David's brand is loyalty, but Ari, do you think that David made people feel comfortable at the tribal councils? Was like, was he doing too much at these tribals?
I think he made everybody laugh, but I think at a certain point, we heard it a couple of times in the audience, but there's a time when he says that his brand is loyalty and everyone was completely on.
All right, enough.
Yes. So I can't imagine how many times he was saying that outside of that tribal. So I'm sure at a certain point he was done. He was done skis.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Oh, man.
All right. Let's take a look at some of the poll results from the listeners of the podcast. Who is the MVP of the season? Big thanks to the tabulator, Kurt Clark, for putting together these poll results. Who's the MVP of the season? Matt, who do you think? What do you think the audience said?
I'm going to go with Rick Devins.
Rick Devins. Okay.
What are we defining this by? Who's the most exciting? Who made this the season that it should have been? What's the criteria here?
We just let the audience decide. What is their criteria for MVP?
My MVP is Ream period Daily. But yes. I think the fans are going to pick. I think the fans are going to pick Rick Devins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, yes. Dun, dun, Rick, dun, Rick dun. Devins. Yeah. Rick Devins ran away 55% of the vote. Victoria was 13%, and then Ream was third. People are too low on Ream.
Seriously.
It's fine. You know what, dude?
She's a pioneer.
It's fine.
All right. What one-time player do you want to see come back and play again, Ari?
Give me some more Ream dot daily, Ream. But we're going to see Rick Devins once again come back.
It's actually, the address is reamda.ly. It's the website. Yeah. Who'd you say you said who? Ream?
I think we're gonna see on the poll, we're gonna see a Rick Devins up in there, but plenty of people are worthy of coming back.
Matt?
I think we're gonna see Ream, and I'm gonna guess 51%. Not that you asked, Rob, but I think the people want Ream back.
50%. No, it's the exact same order as the last poll. Rick, Victoria, Ream. But only 32% for Rick, 25% for Victoria, 16% for Ream. Okay. What name from this season made you say, wait, who's that?
Who? This is easy.
This is a runaway.
Eric by 70%. Not that you asked, Rob. No, I would have gone with 90%. That would be rude.
Yeah.
Eric, I'm sure he's a nice guy, but he looks like the creative player in like a video game. It's like, this is what we're starting off with. He's the survivor creator player.
Eric Heffaman, 68% of the vote for Eric.
Who is after him?
Seemingly nice guy. Seemingly a nice guy. Everybody that played in that season speaks very highly of him. But I cannot remember, a player that it's like that in recent memory where it's like, wait, who?
Yeah,
you could have put another name on him, and I would not have recognized it.
Yeah,
and while he was there, he's in so many different strategy conversations too. You kept seeing him. That's when
Gavin
we saw
had to
him
get rid of him.
Up.
He was getting too much credit.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, underrated player of the season, Matt.
I'll go with Aurora.
Aurora. Okay.
Ooh, yeah. Very nice,
Ari.
I'm gonna go with Chris Underwood.
Oh, that is a good one. But it's actually Victoria, 35%. Gavin, 15%. Lauren, 14%. So Aurora or Chris both did not make the top three.
They're underrated.
Underrated. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Underwood. Okay. Kelly Wentworth Award for Best Pre-Merge. Now this is very tricky because Kelly Wentworth is on the season, but it's the Kelly Wentworth Award for the Best Pre-Merge contestant.
Oh man.
Okay, and this is where even if they went to that were only we're not counting Rick and Chris. And we are including the players that made the jury.
It's got to be Ream.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Ream.
It's a runaway. 71% for Ream, okay? All right.
It's a game, dude.
Yeah. So we're very happy about that. Yes. Yes.
Are you?
All right. Then on a scale of 1 to 10, Merge Tribe, Vata. What do you think the audience said?
On a scale of 1 to 10?
Yeah.
This is probably the create a tribe name of Merge Tribe names.
Very forgettable. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like a two.
No, they were average, 4.8. Okay. Out of the 40 close. Winners, where would you rank Chris Underwood? We give people a drop down, 1 to 40.
This is very difficult.
How do you rank the winner?
How do you rank this guy?
Mm-hmm.
Matt, I'll let you go first, so I can just steal your thoughts and pretend.
Oh yeah, I'll go with 36.
36.
I feel like he probably ended up around there.
Mm-hmm.
All right. All right. So now that I have that as a reference, I think let's go with 35.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
It is, and this is how close it is. It's 35.52. So technically, I'm going to give it to Matt. Okay? He is closer by the 200ths. That it is closer to 36 than 35.
That's right.
But you're right there. I'm trying I'll to think it. If I was going to update the Evolution of Strategy winner rankings, of course, in the Evolution of Strategy, I kept winner rankings the whole way through. I mean, who could I put lower than Chris Underwood? I mean, Chris Underwood, that he came back in and was impressive, but does his impressive, you know, 5 or 6 days, is that more impressive than any other player's, you know, course of 39 days?
No, because it can't be like, mm-hmm. you're not in the game to play. You were in a completely different scenario. I mean, maybe the edge wasn't easy, but you were in a completely different mindset and then shifted, and you had time to think. You had time to not be worried about the other people there on the edge mm-hmm. taking you out. So he had, I think, a huge advantage. In a winter season, they corrected a little bit of some of the things that I think he had kind of working for him in 38. But I don't think it doesn't add up. He didn't play enough days.
I got to take a good look at it, because I think a big part of my equation, I think I need to revisit this. Ooh. And I want to look at players, like when people voted for people versus when players like just voted against somebody, like how many players, because Chris, at least he got 9 votes. Like, people voted for him. I don't think anybody was like, screw Gavin. Victoria might have been at that point. But I think that most of the votes were pro Chris votes. So I feel like that counts for something. At least people were voting for him to win as opposed to voting against another player to lose. It's interesting.
It's a big jury.
It's a big jury.
Big jury.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Was this season placed too low or just right? What do you think? Too low, just right, or too high?
I rank this at number 2. Way too low.
Way too low. Way too low.
Way too low.
Wow. I think it was just right. I'll go with it. Okay. I think it was just right. It ages differently when you're watching it multiple times, but it's probably 36 makes sense to me.
It's fine.
Sorry, Reem. It was too low. Too low. 44% of the audience said it was too low. Just right, 36% of the vote. And too high, just under 19% of the vote for what the Edge of Extinction. Yeah.
What a nail biter.
I think people are too low on the Edge of Extinction. This is the best season I've watched in this rewatch. And I don't think it was close. I enjoyed this more than any, what's the worst, these other seasons that I've enjoyed, like, had moments where I'm like, oh boy, that's rough. That's not great. I'm not having fun. I don't think this season really has a moment that's on the screen.
I feel like this season has it all. When we watch Survivor, what do we like? Blindsides,
fun.
And some fun characters.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So it keeps moving. It doesn't slow down.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? The editing is some beautiful shots of Fiji. You got to love that.
Yeah. I mean, what's the worst thing that happens in the season?
We just didn't get to know people enough. And I kind of was thrown off by this, because looking at the loved ones visit as a good example of this, like, we saw Aurora with her brother, and there was a lot that was alluded to that was left unsaid, which is strange when, you know, with TV. And I feel like we just didn't dig into who these people actually are as people. And that's, for me, that's a huge thing to watch out for. There was the strategy left and right, but some people are definitely huge strategy heads, and others are, we want the characters. We want the personality.
If you are a big strategy person, there's strategy all the way through. This is not like a season that it's like, okay, well, there was no strategy by anybody. You know, I've watched seasons like Thailand, where really Brian is the only one who's playing. In this season, everybody is playing. Like, these votes are very complicated. I mean, even when Chris comes back, you might not love him as a winner, but he tells us at the Final Tribal Council about the negative reverse that he pulled on Lauren to get her to give the idol.
That was impressive. I will say there's no lack of strategy in this season. And I think the only, like, I would have loved to cry during the final tribal. I didn't have that this season, Rob. You know, I've teared up more in other seasons. That's how I rank a season. You know, Ari does, oh, which one's better, this or that? I'm like, how many tears start to well up in my eyes? Not enough.
Get the Kleenex.
Yeah.
So out of all of the seasons that we've talked about, you know, I would rather watch The Edge of Extinction again over anything else we've talked about so far in this journey.
Yeah.
This season has the things that we yell at our television about, right? Like, what do we want? Oh, we have super fans on there. Pretty much all of them. We also have finally these players are finally getting rid of the returning players. We yell at the people to do that every single time. They fail to do it every single time. They accomplished it this time. And, you know, we got everything that we always want the players to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm so curious though, Rob, you know, when we get to 35, how are you going to receive it? Are you going to be coming out talking about, like, look, this was a lot better than I thought. This was the best one I've watched. I don't know.
I don't know. You mean the 35th best season or Heroes versus Healers versus Hustle?
Oh, yeah. No. That's a whole other story. Okay. But yeah, 35th best season coming up next.
Well, this is a great segue to talk about the 35th best season of Survivor, because we are going to be talking about next week. I was a little surprised when I heard today what the 35th best season of Survivor was going to be. But Do you have any thoughts, Matt? What do you think it might be?
The 35th best season of Survivor? Yeah. I'm at a loss honestly, because I try to block out like the you know, anything that's above 30 in these rankings I've tried to block out. So
okay.
I don't know. I have no clue. Ari, I literally have no clue.
What do you think?
I'm going to go with, if you were surprised and something that gets not much love, I think it's going to be Guatemala.
Guatemala. Okay. All right. Next Wednesday night, I'll be watching another Survivor season, and I will go back through it to revisit a season from not that long ago. Survivor Worlds Apart, the 35th best season of Survivor, coming up on the podcast next Wednesday night. I'll be talking with Jenny Autumn and my co-host from Kid Nation, Phil Thompson, next Wednesday night. We will go through and talk about everything Survivor Worlds Apart. That is the final season of The Evolution of Strategy. I have said that I have always wanted a do-over on that one, where I feel like that Josh and I were really just like dragging by the end of The Evolution of Strategy we were racing to get it up before Survivor 31 started. And like 29 and 30, we really kind of banged out. So the season 30 is a blur. I am looking forward to going back. I know that Mario Lanza has been talking it up a lot recently of season 30. So let's look. Season 35, yeah. The 35th best season of Survivor is Survivor Worlds Apart. All right. All right. Yeah, what about you? What's your reaction?
I like Worlds Apart a little bit more than other people. Big Carolyn Rivera fan. She kills it. Yeah. She's great.
Yeah,
Rodney's a kooky person. I can't believe
that's
he's
true.
Real.
Yep.
Very interesting person to meet in real life. Who else? Who else is on there? Dan, I can't believe Dan Foley is a real person out functioning in the world, interacting with other humans.
Yeah. So, all right. We'll see next Wednesday night. Tune in for the 35th best season of Survivor, Worlds Apart.
Looking forward to
okay.
it.
Okay. This weekend over on the Patron Feedback Show, I'm going to go through everything with Matt Price. Got a couple hundred questions we didn't get to. We will pull from more of those. You can also send in additional feedback questions. Go to robisawebsite.com/top40feedback to send in your questions about things we talked about on the panel or anything that we didn't get to here tonight. Let me also add that I feel like that the Rick Devens fatigue during the season, like, I do feel like that came a lot from people not being happy with how Ben won in season 35. I think that if it wasn't for Ben winning in season 35, and this is like a year later, it's like a lot of like, oh, here we go again. So I feel like that Rick also suffered from that as far as people in the audience not liking how he was playing.
They don't like idols.
Yeah, didn't like it. Okay. All right. So, Ari, where can people keep up with you? You were great tonight. You came in with lots of hot takes. You defended your beloved Edge of Extinction.
you know what? Love Edge of Extinction. So people can find me on Twitter at Ari Ferrari. If you're listening to this on the podcast, that's A-R-I-F-E-R-R-I.
Yes.
And so one thing I've been doing is catch me after this on Twitch. I want to keep talking Edge of Extinction.
Yes.
Let's hear your hot takes.
Yes. I saw that you had posted that you were doing. What else do you do on Twitch?
I just honestly, it's very fun when random strangers just show up just to say, hey, what's up? Just start talking with them. Mm-hmm. I like doing a thing where I ask people to name a song and I'll give you a story about it. So a friend, someone came on, they said,
let's try this for real. Okay. Matt, name a song.
Wannabe by the Spice Girls.
I'll never forget. I went to my sister's fifth grade like talent show, and she and like eight of her friends, there's what, only like five Spice Girls, but there were like eight of them, and they all coordinated the Spice Girls Wannabe song, a little coordination. So for me, whenever I hear Spice Girls Wannabe, I always think of my little sister and her talent show. It was a lot of fun.
Wow.
Is this a David Wright story, or is this a real
story? This is an Ari Ferrari story. Yeah, there's no poop in this one.
Okay. Wow. Here, give us another one. This is incredible.
What's in the chat?
Well, ask the chat. See if they have
so many songs to choose from.
Yeah. See if they have another one. And so, okay. All right. Give out your handle for your Twitch.
It's twitch.tv/AriFerrari. So if you're following me on Twitter, it'll be the same thing on Twitch. So why don't we just do the Twitter thing? Just follow me on that. Then you'll catch me on Twitch, and we'll chat up Edge of Extinction. We'll chat music, and music is the soundtrack to your life. We'll go from there.
Okay. Mark Hallman says Rocket Man, Elton John.
I mean, the only memory I have about Rocket Man is seeing that trailer over and over again. I love going to movie theaters, and every single movie that I would go to, I would see that. I saw the trailer for Rocket Man so many times that at that point, like, I didn't even have to watch the movie. It's like, all right, yes, this is going to win an award. It looks very nice. So even though I don't have many memories from actually listening to it, every single movie I went to in 2019, it always had to do with Rocket Man. Better watch Rocket Man. And you know what? That trailer didn't work because I didn't watch it.
Oh, okay. All right.
But fun song.
Matt, we opened it up at the top of the show.
We did.
You can catch Matt every single week talking about wrestling with Mari Forth.
That's right.
Over on the wrestling rehap up. So
that's right.
Yeah. Matt, what's been going on the wrestling rehap up?
On the wrestling rehap, we just had the Royal Rumble. Edge, the wrestling superstar, Edge, otherwise known as the Rated R Superstar, won the Royal Rumble. It's perfect to set up this week talking about the Edge. But yeah, we have different guests every single week from the RHAB community. We just had Grace Leader, who we give everyone different names. So we had Chantel Francis, who was Sugar Shan. We had Grace Leader, who is Stella, excuse me. And then Chappelle is Sea Dog. So,
C-Dog.
Hey, you never know.
Is that why he's Sea Dog on Twitter now?
Yes. He's been Sea Dog because he's Sea Dog. And so we're coming up with all these different characters for different wrestlers. We don't have, I think we're partially probably worried about like coming up with theme songs. We don't want to get sued. We don't want to get you sued, Rob. Mm-hmm.
Do it on Ari's Twitch channel.
We'll do it. We're going to do it on Ari's Twitch. Ari, we're going to bring you on so you could talk about wrestling theme songs and your memories with them.
So many memories of the Chris Jericho theme song just blasting.
Oh my gosh. We'll have you on at some point to talk about it. But check out the Wrestling Rehap Up on Reality TV Rehap Ups. And Mari, my co-host, is at Mari Talks Too Much. I'm at Matt Scott GW. We don't take wrestling too seriously, and we're definitely welcoming newcomers if anyone wants to check it all out.
Okay, Matt, you did a great job here talking about the Edge of Extinction, and looking forward to let's bring down another season along the way.
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't do it.
All right. This was really, really fun tonight. The time has flew by talking about The Edge of Extinction. I'm really having a great time with this series. Of course, for our patrons, you can listen to our weekend feedback show to talk more about The Edge of Extinction over at robhasawebsite.com/patron. And in our main feed, check out that if you missed it, I did a podcast with Gandia Johnson. One of the cool things about this series was we went back a couple of weeks ago. We watched Thailand. Gandia reached out. She's like, this was great. And I said, this is a catfish. Don't fall for it. This is the real Gandia. Does not have like 30 followers. Like, this is a catfish. But it was like the account was made in like 2010. I was like, this is interesting. And then it turned out it was the real Gandia. I think it's one of the best Rob is a Podcast episodes of all time with Gandia. You'll cry, you'll laugh. It had it all with Gandia. If you missed it, check out our Talking with T-Bird with Gandia from this past week and everything else we have going on over at robhasawebsite.com. Thank you so much, everybody. Take care. Have a good one. Bye. Support for this episode of Rob's Podcast comes from our friends over at Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do, and it's hard work, but you know it's easy? Bundling with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. Good thing, too, you're busy enough. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today.